Good morning. Someone said we have a quorum now. There we go. We got Mr. Atkins, Mr. McHugh. Did the team bus just show up? Or? Okay. I didn't get the memo. No, you don't. It's just the. All right. Well, we're going to get this started. It is Tuesday, August 14th, 2018. I'll call the City Council budget briefing to order. Thank you all for being here. We'll begin with an invocation, and then Mr. Callahan will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Our invocator this morning is Reverend Yvette R. Blair Lavallee at the Gathering Church in Miss Gates District 13. She is the co-founder and currently the co-pastor of the new worshiping community in Dallas called The Gathering, a womanist church. Through her social justice ministry work, Reverend Blair Lavallee empowers women to lift their voices. A licensed pastor and elder in the United Methodist Church, she serves in ministry, teaching and preaching the gospel at numerous churches and faith-based organizations. She's a native of Dallas and holds a bachelor's in journalism from UNT, and she's currently a candidate for the Doctor of Ministry in Land, Food, and Faith Formation at Memphis Theological Seminary, and is 2013 magna cum laude graduate of Perkins School of Theology at SMU. She is an academic fellow at Vanderbilt Divinity School of Public Theology and Racial Justice, and she's served as a theologian in residence at Princeton Theological Seminary, and an academic fellow at the Princeton's Black Theology and Leadership Institution. A real leader in the city. Thank you so much for being here, Reverend. All rise.
May we prepare our hearts and minds to receive this prayer. Sovereign God, I offer this prayer for these leaders of the city of Dallas, each person who has been entrusted to be a good steward of the resources, the relationships, and the responsibilities for which they have been elected, appointed, or designated to serve. God, I would be remiss if I did not say that there is a sense of lament as we are still navigating our own thoughts about the breach of trust from this past week that has rippled throughout this community. God, may you bring healing in those places where there is hurt. God, as these servant leaders prepare to conduct today's business, may they do so with a heart for the well-being of the least, the last, and the lost. May they look through the lens of the marginalized as they live fully into this calling of serving in public office and doing a good work that honors the people of Dallas and that upholds a consciousness of ethics and morality. I pray, Lord, that the words, the interactions, and decisions of each leader represented will be filled with grace, with harmony, and with a kind of integrity that demonstrates love for every neighbor. God, in the difficult moments, remind us that contention is not the answer, but that communicating with concord is. And finally, God, for every citizen of Dallas now and in the future who will ultimately be affected by the leadership of these City of Dallas leaders, I offer this prayer on behalf of them. God, may you guard the hearts and minds of each person who puts forth their hands to do the work of this great city. In the name of Jesus the Christ, the one who modeled the way of what it means to lead like a servant. Amen.
Thank you, Reverend. We appreciate it. And today is all about stewardship, since it's budget day, being good stewards of the city. We've got a lot of work to do, so I'll get right into it. We will begin with our briefings. We're going to look at briefings A, B, and C today, the city manager's recommended budget. We'll review the state law requirements relating to property tax. That's important for everybody. And then we'll look at public safety, which is the first of these. I want to say right out of the get-go, thank you, Manager Brodnix, Elizabeth, for the completeness, the professionalism, and the details that you've shown in the budget. Tomorrow we will brief on five other strategic areas and finish it up. Hopefully we can get this done by noon today. That's what I'm kind of shooting for. But if we need to take a break, we'll do that. It's all a question of how much you want to talk and ask questions. Also, after we're done, we will take up a voting item. The item is necessary if we want to consider a property tax rate that is above the effective tax rate. We'll get into that discussion, the difference. And be clear, today's vote will not set the rate. It sets the ceiling for the tax rate and that we will adopt on September 18th, so it won't be anything higher. It can go lower. I also want to go ahead and mention how we're going to lead the amendment process in this. I'd like to work through our committees, and I've asked our committee chairs to marshal their processes in each of them. So to make this efficient, we'll handle the economic development housing amendments on Monday, August 20th, human and social needs that day, government performance and financial management that day, the following Mondays, quality of life, public safety and mobility. There may be an issue here or there that has to be worked out with one of the committees. I'll ask the chairs if those things don't work out to figure out an alternative plan and get back with me. But anyway, you'll need to submit budgeted amendments that fall within the purview of each committee, either the Friday prior to the briefing, so we can brief those. And the committees will review them and then bring forth their recommendations to us as a body, as a whole, on August 29th. So that's how we're going to approach this process. I think we get better at it every year. And Mr. Brodnix, again, thank you for delivering a balanced budget and the work you've done. I'll turn the mic over to you.
Thank you, Mayor, and good morning. I'm excited to speak to you today about my second budget with the City of Dallas. As you know, last year we put together a balanced biennial budget that not only covered the current fiscal year we're in, but also laid out a plan for next year as well. Over the last several months, we've listened to citizens as well as the City Council, conducted our biennial community survey, re-examined our revenue and expense assumptions for next year, and asked ourselves, quite honestly, what kind of a city do we want Dallas to be as we look to prepare this current budget that we proposed. I think we can all agree that we want Dallas to be a safe city, but more than that, we also want Dallas to be an innovative city, a livable city, an inclusive city, as well as a thriving city in all regard. The biennial budget for fiscal year 2019 and fiscal year 2020 touches on these areas and others as well. The biennial budget is balanced for each of the next 2 years. The next year's budget totals $3.6 billion. The general fund, which I'm sure we'll spend most of our time talking about, totals $1.35 billion. The current year general fund budget was adopted at $1.28 million. The year-to-year increase, as I've shared with you in our one-on-one conversations, is about $74.8 million, or about 5.86% above the prior year. Most of this is considered things that we have to do to continue our current level of services. For example, 63.9 million of that total, 74.8 million general fund increases, includes for our tax increment finance payment for this current year, $10 million. Our meet and confer obligations at $25.7 million. Police and fire pension increases, $6.1 million. Civilian merit at $7.5 million. Employee and retirement health care benefit increases of $5.5 million. Our master lease debt payment increase of $2.5 million. Mayor and council election, $1.3 million. And then the school crossing guard program, which added an additional $5.3 million to that budget. In the budget, you will see that we continue to put service first. You'll also see that we promote equity across the city, and you will see that we continue to invest in each of the six strategic priority areas. And so at this point, I will turn it over to Elizabeth Raich, our Chief Financial Officer, to take us through the presentations this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Broadnax. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. That's right. It's the most wonderful time of the year, budget time. I want to thank our residents who responded to our community surveys, who came to meetings, who have given input, and to the council as well for all of your input that has led to the budget that we are delivering to you today, which hopefully meets those needs that you have identified as best as we can with the resources that we have. I also want to thank the staff, not only of the Office of Budget, although I really want to thank them, but I also want to thank all of the staff in the departments who contributed to the budget. And I just wanted to get those thank yous done here at the very beginning, because too often we get into the meat of everything and forget to say thank you to everyone who spent so much time and effort putting together the budget. I want to introduce the Director of the Office of Budget, Jack Ireland, and the Assistant Director, Jeanette Whedon, who will be here with me today presenting. So today we're going to talk about the annual budget that you will adopt, about the next year of the biennial budget, the planned year. We'll go through our revenues, our expenses on the general fund side, as well as capital and debt service. We'll talk about our enterprise funds and then next steps. The budget reflects the commitment, as Mr. Broadnax said, to service first, and gives us a framework to deliver service to the community, and offered us an opportunity to ask, what kind of city do we want Dallas to be? Our budgets this year, as he mentioned, total $3.6 billion in the first year, $3.7 billion in the second year. The general fund is $1.35 billion. And does include a property tax rate reduction of 1.54 cents. We'll talk a lot more about that. We're focused on long-term fiscal sustainability. So in addition to the biennial budget, we have a five-year forecast, and we're really focused on making sure that the decisions that we make today or ask you to make today are sustainable in the future. We based our budget priorities on community input and, of course, your direction, and addressed our six strategic priorities, which you know well. The next page is a chart which just gives an overview of the total budget. As TC mentioned, we'll focus a lot of our time on that top line, the general fund line that you can see in the third column over is $1.35 billion. I do think it's important to look at the total picture. And when you look at the change from what you adopted last year at 3.1 to what we're asking for this year at 3.6, you can see that much of the change is in capital, and that is because of the bond program that voters approved. And we are now putting into play a lot of the funding that voters approved in the bond program. So much of that increase is capital. As you know, funding for our city budget comes from many different revenue sources. General fund revenues come from property taxes, sales taxes, franchise fees, charges for service, and fines and forfeitures, and the enterprise fund revenues come from the customer service charges for their operations. This is a chart of our total budget, and we've circled in green the pieces that we'll focus on first, which are the general fund and general purpose pieces. So let me go into revenues. The revenues this year break out in this way: property tax at 53%, sales tax at 23%, and then the remainder of the budget from the franchise and other revenues and fees. The certified taxable property values have gone up 9.94% this year. You may recall that we had estimated 7.22% increase, so this was a higher increase than we had estimated last year when we put together the second year of the biennial. This is the seventh consecutive year of growth following 3 years of declining values during the recession. Again, we have budgeted for a 1.54 cent reduction to the property tax rate. That's a 2% reduction. This is the third consecutive year that we will have a property tax rate reduction. And when combined, it is 3.2 cents or 4%. That is the largest combined tax rate reduction in at least the last 35 years. So again, I mentioned values increased by 9.94%. And we're expecting those values to go up again next year. 6.25% is the assumption we have built in. On the next page, you can see the ups and downs over the years. And you can see that first period that I was referring to, the rate reductions. The total there was 2.53 cents reductions over those 4 years. That was a reduction of 3.75%. And then you see another reduction in there at 1.25 cents. That was a 1.69% reduction. And then you see the 3 years here we're proposing. It is 3.2 cents or 4.02%. So in both the cents and the percent, it is the largest reduction in the last 35 years. Of course, each property owner's bill will differ. And as you know, we have 4 counties and 18 school districts in Dallas, and so this property tax bill is one example. If you're in Richardson School District, you'll, of course, see something different for the ISD line item, et cetera. But this is an example of what the typical property tax bill would look like for someone with an average value home at $275,000, which is the average residential property value this year. You can see, I think it's important to note that the city of Dallas is only 28% of the tax bill. A lot of property tax owners, of course, are very concerned, and we do our part in the city, but in terms of the tax bill, we are less than 30%. Sales taxes, as you know, are 8.25% in Dallas, including the 2% local option that's governed, so 6.25% goes to the state. We have 2%, 1% going to DART, and 1% staying with the city. And so we have assumed for the budget this next year 2.7% growth and a total of close to $12 million in anticipated revenue. On the next chart, you can see the sales tax revenue growth. Again, I said 2.7% or $312 million. Next year, we are anticipating or budgeting for a 2.46% growth, so still growth. And a total budget for sales tax of about $319 million in the second year of the biennial. But as you note, that is a slower rate of growth than we have had this year or in the prior years. So what we're seeing in our forecast is a softening of sales tax, that it will continue to grow, but we are forecasting that that growth will soften. Again, the second year of the biennial at 2.46%, and then we go down to 2.32%. 2.17 and 2.03. So in looking at the economy, we're seeing a softening. Now, the 30-year average of sales tax growth has been 3.55%. So we are seeing that in the next few years, it should soften below what has been our 30-year average. Our 10-year average over the last 10 years has been 2.93% growth. And again, we're predicting or forecasting that it will be a little bit lower than that, but still growing. And I want to emphasize that we still continue to see the economy growing and sales tax growing. Moving into expenses, the largest portion of our general fund expenses are for public safety. So when we say what kind of city do we want Dallas to be, we want Dallas to be a safe city. I think that we put our money where our mouth is on that, in that public safety is over $800 million of our general fund budget, 60%. And the rest of the budget is, of course, depicted there as well in terms of the general fund. I want to move now into some highlights of the budget. So let's start with public safety, our first strategic priority. The budget includes, as Mr. Broadnax mentioned at the outset, $27.5 million in this coming year, with another $15 million on top of that in the second year of the biennial to fund the final year of the meet and confer agreement that Council approved in 2016. So these are for the pay increases that were passed in 2016, a double step pay increase, which is approximately 10% for those who have steps left, adding a top step for anyone who is topped out at 2%, and increasing the starting pay to $51,688, which is 16% more than it was at the start or prior to the agreement. So over the 3 years, increasing that starting pay by 16%. And this is starting pay without a bachelor's degree. If one has a bachelor's degree, the starting pay is higher. The focus in the budget, of course, is on recruiting and retaining police officers and firefighters, and we have put the numbers here. We'll have the public safety briefing a little bit later this morning. I will let them elaborate on all of the recruitment and retention efforts that they have underway, but I can tell you they are significant. And I do want to emphasize at this point, because I think there has been some information out there about our stance on the numbers of particularly police officers, the city manager and I are committed to finding additional funding should we be able to recruit additional officers above the budget plan, or should our attrition be lower than expected. It is an aggressive hiring plan, but I do want to make sure that folks know that we did not limit the police department in terms of how many officers we were going to put into the budget. We are working with them to ensure that we provide the support that they need to have robust recruitment efforts and have made the commitment to getting to these numbers or perhaps better if we're able to do that. So I'll let them address that further, but I wanted to say that at the outset of public safety. The pension deal, contributing $6.1 million more than we have this year to the pension, so a total of $156.8 million. That is the full contribution that we agreed to contribute in HB 3158. Consolidating security for city facilities into court services. This is an effort to put all of our public safety, our security, into one place. Currently, we have security in our equipment and building services, and various departments, of course, come in and request additional security guards or security measures. We wanted to consolidate all of our security for city facilities into one place so that we could conduct a comprehensive risk assessment of the security needs for all of our facilities and programs and be making corporate decisions or citywide decisions on the security that we were going to have at city facilities versus taking one-offs here and there and making decisions on security. So we have money in the budget for that comprehensive risk assessment and have consolidated those functions in one place. And, of course, much discussion investing more than $5 million for the safety of Dallas school children. Moving on to mobility. Investing more than $125 million of bonds and cash to improve the driving condition of streets. So I know that many people say, wait a minute, the bond program had more than $500 million for streets. Why are you only putting $125 million in? And I will say that, yes, it did, and that money for the street proposition will be spent in these 5 years for the bond program. This $125 million is not a direct correlation to that bond amount. It is the combination of the cash that we put into streets every year and some bond funding. And so we are actually increasing our commitment to streets in this budget. In the adopted budget, we had a little under $57 million, and this year went up to $62. The budget takes us to $64 million. So it is an increase in cash investment for the city of $2 million. And then you put on top of that the bond funding, gets you to the $125. We're going to leverage the $10 million of federal highway safety improvement funds with the $2 million in city funds to address high accident intersections. Then we've got an alley program. I think this is an exciting new program for the city. We've heard a lot about the accessibility of alleys, and particularly for our utilities, sanitation, water, et cetera, the accessibility in alleys is an issue for us and leads to additional costs in terms of maintenance of equipment that are going down alleys that need some help. So this pilot program will pull together money from public works, from water, from stormwater, and from sanitation to address the vegetation and also the driving surface in alleys. So it's a total of $1.8 million. We've heard many calls for expanding the bike lane program, and we are stair-stepping that in the budget as well. You might notice that that is a common way we're doing things, is trying to ramp up the funding year over year for a series of years, kind of helps us ease into getting additional funding to some of these infrastructure priorities. So we're doing that with bike lanes. The current budget, and has been for years, has been $500,000. In this budget, it's $1 million, so another $500,000 added to it. So last year, or the current year, we have $500,000. In our proposed budget, it's $1 million. In the second year of the biennial, going up to $1.5 million, and then we would anticipate adding another $500,000 for a total of $2 million once we get to 2021. Combining our water, wastewater, stormwater into one utility. This is important. It's a one water approach, and we believe that that will provide comprehensive management of our valuable water resources. It also has some savings of about 15 FTEs and $750,000, but more importantly, we believe that it brings together the function into one place, which is needed. Not mentioned on the page, but also important, are city facilities. We talked about that quite a bit last year and the ramp up of the funding for maintenance of city facilities. We've done that again in this budget. You may recall last year, for the current year, we added $1.5 million. We had been spending $5 million annually. We made it $6.5 million. This budget calls for $7 million, of which $500,000 is specifically earmarked for ADA improvements in our facilities, which we know we need to make. Economic and neighborhood vitality. In addition to the property tax rate cut of 1.54 cents, we have money in the budget to implement our comprehensive housing policy, and $1 million to assist historically underserved areas at risk of displacement because of changing market conditions, and also areas that might be in need of intensive environmental enhancements or master planning, formalized neighborhood organizations. And we felt like it was important to focus on those areas, so we specifically added money for that. We've talked about this before. Last year we talked about it as something that would happen in the planned year, and here we are. Now it's in our proposed annual budget, is the online one-stop shop for residents and businesses to submit construction plans to the city. So this is permitting. This is our permitting system and the ability for electronic plan review. And it's very exciting, and I think will be very helpful to the community. And then $100,000 for a historic resource survey with private partners as well. In human and social needs, we, of course, have discussed much and heard a lot about homelessness in the city of Dallas. And in this budget, we wanted to address the issue of homelessness in the city. So we've included $2.3 million for some specific initiatives, which you've been briefed on, strengthening our response systems at $250,000, providing increased supportive housing for seniors at $250,000, leveraging innovative and collaborative shovel-ready capital projects for $500,000, the master leasing program at $1.2 million, developing a landlord incentive program at $100,000. Then we have the panhandling program, which council had budgeted $200,000 for, or $215,000. We've added $200,000 for a total of $415,000 to continue the public education on ways to assist those who are in need. In our Welcoming Communities and Immigrant Affairs Office, we have two initiatives in the budget, both of which partner with nonprofit organizations. So it's not an addition of staff in our office, but it is an addition of support for private or for nonprofit organizations providing services. $75,000 for citizenship promotion and $100,000 for civil legal services. The budget creates an Office of Equity and Human Rights to promote equity as one of our core values and, of course, to focus on fair housing. So all of our fair housing activities will be part of this office, as well as the implementation of our resilience plan and equity initiatives. Budget includes $235,000 to expand our Fresh Start Reentry Program for formerly incarcerated individuals to come back into the community, including looking at what jobs within the city of Dallas might be available for folks who are transitioning to the community. In quality of life, I want to spend a little time on the first bullet because I know it's been a big question. Is transitioning Fair Park to from city management to Fair Park First? So this is an exciting opportunity for the city. And I think it is a game changer for Fair Park. But the question has been, what are you going to do with the money that is not needed for the appropriation for the manager at Fair Park? And in the first year of the budget, the annual budget that you're being asked to adopt this year, the entire amount of what has previously been spent on Fair Park is intended to be spent on Fair Park again. So that amount is $14.7 million. Once the agreement is approved, once council votes on that agreement, we will be able to finalize these numbers. At the moment, because we aren't sure of what the commencement date would be for the contract, that would depend on council voting schedule. Some of these numbers are a little soft, but I'll go through them. We'll spend up to $5.6 million for management and operations. So that includes leaving the city staff in place until the commencement date and then 45 days past the commencement date of the contract and the appropriation for the manager for the first year. There were reserves in the agreement that we need to fund, $2 million for a transition reserve in the event that the manager's fundraising efforts in the first couple of years don't yield as much as they anticipated, $500,000 in seed money for an operational reserve, $1 million for the city transition reserve, and the remainder of the money would go toward funding capital projects that the manager would put into their capital improvement plan. So we've set approximately $5 million for that, but that number could and probably would go up. Additionally, in quality of life, allocating money for a dangerous animals team focused primarily on aggressive dogs and preventing dog fights. Adding $650,000 for 7 neighborhood code representatives. Again, that outreach into the community, making sure that in code we are serving the needs of the community and aware, and providing the liaisons to address those issues. In the library system, a big initiative to improve efficiency and the experience for our customers. So $2 million for an RFID system. So if you could, you could carry 50 books up to the counter and check them out all at once using the RFID. And it makes it very fast not having to go individually to check out each individual book. Of course, then when you return books, it's also much faster, and there can be use of automation in terms of returning the books to the shelf or to the proper library. So that leaves our staff more available to assist customers, to answer questions, to talk about how to conduct research, to explain the resources of the library. So this is an efficiency measure that we're particularly looking forward to. Also in quality of life, expediting the opening of 6 spray grounds and partnering with school districts like DISD and RISD to offer more green spaces and parks. In government performance and financial management, council passed a resolution in June regarding meetings in the community. The budget includes the funding for those meetings at $90,000. That's for the equipment that we would need to broadcast from meeting locations throughout the community. Of course, there might be staff time, overtime, other expenses, but in terms of the hard expense of $90,000 for the equipment, that is in the budget. We've included funding to encourage participation in Census 2020 and the Mayor's Complete Count Committee. Establishing the Office of Innovation, which actually Council asked to have established a couple of years ago, and here we are, and that is in the budget to establish that Office of Innovation to lead city staff in our efforts to improve service and increase efficiency, of course, be responsive to the community. We've added $200,000 to develop an ADA transition plan. This is the American with Disabilities Act. to improve our ADA compliance in both facilities and programs. This is something we have needed in the city. It is vitally important to be an inclusive city, which we have said is one of our things we want the city to be. And so we need to conduct this plan and then implement it. And you might recall earlier when I talked about city facilities, I mentioned the $500,000 specifically for ADA improvements. That would be informed, which improvements we make would come from this transition plan, laying out the priorities there. Conducting the availability and disparity study. Again, working to increase participation in our procurement process. I also want to mention a few things not on this page. Raising the minimum wage for city employees to $11.50 per hour, that would affect about 550 employees in the city as of now, when we ran the numbers as to how many it would affect. So that would be the new minimum wage for city employees. That is above the MIT Living Wage Index of $11.15 per hour. But we want to make a commitment to our employees, and so we have raised our minimum wage in this proposal. We've also raised the starting salary for truck drivers. The majority are in sanitation, but there are truck drivers in many other departments as well. The starting wage would be $16.50 per hour. We've included a 3% civilian merit raise and also health benefits choices for all of our employees. There are some organizational changes that are reflected in the budget and that Mr. Broadnax announced last week. We've talked about some of them. I will move on to the final page that I'm going to cover, which is a recap of our general fund expenses and revenues. So, again, I mentioned property tax at 53% of the budget, sales tax at another 23% of the budget. That's on the outside, that revenue wheel on the outside here. On the inside, you can see our expenses. Public safety at $805 million, or 60% of the general fund budget, and then the other departments. We show this because we think it's important to note that every dollar paid by residents for property taxes goes to fund public safety. And almost 30% of the sales tax is also needed to fund public safety. And so when we talk about where are we investing our money, it is important to realize that while perhaps we could do more in many areas, we are making public safety our number one priority at 60% of the general fund budget and at all of our property tax and 30% of our sales tax. With that, I would like to turn it to Jeanette Whedon, our assistant director in the Office of Budget, to go over some additional slides here on capital and debt.
Good morning. The fiscal year 18-19 proposed budget for capital or general purpose capital totals $420.4 million, and it includes projects supported through property tax revenues, such as street and alley improvements, park and recreation projects, as well as pay-as-you-go funding to support facility maintenance as well as equipment replacement. On slide number 30, general purpose capital also includes the 2017 bond program. The proposed budget assumes $210 million of the $1.05 billion will be spent in fiscal year 2019, with close to half or 45.3% or $95.2 million on street projects. On slide number 31, the proposed biannual budget includes general obligation debt service. The proposed debt service tax rate of 0.211 will be used to pay debt service on the current outstanding principal of $1.8 billion. The $296.2 million budgeted assumes principal and interest payments of $251 million and $19.6 million for TIF increment payment. Bond issuances anticipated in November of 2018 totaled $425 million and will cover $157 million for PAYREF, $107 million to close out the 2006 and 2012 bond program, and $161 million for the 2017 bond program. Of course, we assume an amount for pay referendum for budget purposes. However, we would only issue debt after approval by City Council and after an order entered and approved by the court. In the enterprise funds on slide number 33, The fiscal year 18-19 proposed budget for enterprise funds total $1.126 billion for day-to-day operations and maintenance and $377.65 million for capital. I'll highlight a few of the largest enterprise funds. Dallas Water Utilities is the largest enterprise fund for the city with a proposed operating and capital budget of $965.5 million. The current fiscal year 17-18 biannual budget, the budget that we're currently operating under, assumed a rate increase in fiscal year 19. However, after settling the Sabine River Authority dispute, DWU will not realize a retail rate increase in fiscal year 19 or fiscal year 20. Residential customers will actually see a decrease of $1.82 per month, going from $67.12 to $65.30 per month. In sanitation services, the proposed budget assumes an 8.4% fee increase to support employee compensation, healthcare increases, equipment, and fleet replacement. Residential customers will see an increase of $2.11 from $25.18 to $27.29. Additionally, the landfill gate rate will increase 5% from $25 to $26.25 per ton. Storm drainage management operations, as mentioned previously, will be incorporated into Dallas Water Utilities effective October 1st, but will continue as a separate fund dedicated to flood control, floodplain, and surface water quality activities. The proposed budget totals $58.4 million, and the average residential customer will see a monthly increase of 0.32, and commercial customers will see an increase of 0.09. The fee increase will support capital, equipment, and maintenance. Slide number 37 walks through the budget timeline. On slide 38, as the agenda, posted agenda notes, we will discuss today public the public safety workshop after this meeting, as well as the property tax truth and taxation. We have a budget public hearing scheduled for August 22nd, and then two tax rate public hearings on September 5th as well as September 12th.
So we're going to go on into the second briefing, which is letter B for today, which is the property tax rate state law requirements. So I wanted to cover on slide two, just as an overview, provide some information on property tax, review the state law requirements for both the effective tax rate and rollback rate, and then talk about the schedule for adopting the ad valorem tax rate. So on slide three, just as an overview, property tax is our single largest revenue source. We receive about $984 million a year from property tax, and that is split between the general fund and the debt service fund. About 73% goes into the general fund and about 27% goes into the debt service. So property tax revenue is composed of three factors, that being the tax base that is certified by the appraisal districts, the exemptions that are allowed by state law and approved by city council, and then the tax rate that is set by city council each September. On slide four, wanted to mention that the four appraisal districts that the city resides within did certify their values on July 25th. They do this every year as required by state law. Values for the new certified value are $130.1 billion. This is a 9.94% increase over the current year. We've now seen seven consecutive years of growth that followed the 3 years of recession that we had. So you can see the breakdown in the table between residential property value and non-residential property value. Non-residential accounts for 55.5% of the value of our tax base, and residential accounts for 44.5%. Moving on to the next slide, regarding exemptions. Exemptions, again, are allowed under state law and approved by the city council. There's about $40 billion of value that is exempt within the city, and that would equal about $305 million if we were able to tax that value. Exemptions, there are properties that are totally exempt, such as schools, churches, governmental properties. Exemptions also apply to our homestead properties, our over 65 and disabled properties, and then there's other exemptions related to historical or agricultural types of things that are allowed by state law. The two primary exemptions, of course, are the 20% homestead exemption. We've had this exemption in place at 20% since 1988. That's the maximum allowed by state law. And then the over 65 and disabled exemption, last summer y'all amended that, changing it from a $64,000 exemption, changing it up to 90. We are committed, and y'all made a change to the FMPC, requiring that we relook this every 2 years. So on every odd-numbered year, we'll be back looking at the over 65 and disabled exemption. But for now, it's standing at $90,000. Going on to slide six, the tax rate. Again, each September, City Council approves the tax rate. The tax rate that is recommended to support the fiscal year 19 budget is a reduction of 1.54 cents, reducing from our current rate down to 76.50 cents per $100 of valuation. And again, as Elizabeth mentioned, it's our third consecutive year with a tax rate reduction, the three-year combined reduction being 3.2 cents, which is our largest combined reduction in at least 35 years. The same on slide seven. You saw this in the information Elizabeth went over. It's included here again, showing the increases and decreases in our tax rate over the years. On slide eight, regarding the split in our tax rate, as I mentioned earlier, we split the tax rate between general fund and debt service, and you can see last year, current year, and the proposed rate being 76.50 cents per $100 of valuation, with 55.5 being for the general fund and 21.0 cents for debt service. So moving into some of the requirements that we have related to state law. State law does govern property taxes in Texas and ensures that property owners are given notice and have certain rights. If the proposed tax rate exceeds the lower of the effective tax rate or the rollback rate, we are required to publish the calculated rates and hold two public hearings. Dallas County Tax Office calculates the two rates for us, the effective rate and the rollback rate. If we do propose a rate that's going to be higher than the effective rate, then we would run our public notice on August the 24th. And state law does allow taxpayers the opportunity to roll back or limit increases in certain cases, which would be the rollback rate. So on slide 10, the state law is very specific on the notice that we have to run in the newspaper. Dictates the size, the section that we post in, et cetera. There's an example or a draft of the advertisement that's listed there on slide 10. On slide 11, just information about the effective tax rate. That's one of the two tax rates calculated by the tax office. The effective tax rate is the rate that would generate the same amount of revenue next year as was generated this year on property that's taxed in both years. So it excludes new construction, and there are adjustments related to tax increment financing values as well. The effective tax rate has been calculated at 73.91 cents. That is 2.58 cents less than our proposed rate. So if we were to set the tax rate at the effective tax rate of 73.91, it would result in a decrease of revenue of about $32.8 million. In order to have a balanced budget, we would need to reduce expenses in the same amount. On slide 12, regarding the rollback rate, the rollback rate is the rate that if it is exceeded, voters do have the opportunity to limit taxes. If we were to go over the rollback rate, citizens would have the opportunity to have a petition. The petition is successful, require an election. The election passes, it would roll back the rate to this rollback rate, which is 78.11 cents. So on slide 13, the rollback rate is calculated at 78.11. That is 1.61 cents above the proposed rate. Again, our proposed rate is 76.50. So this is would allow us to increase the tax rate. And if we increase the tax rate up to the rollback rate, it would generate an additional $20.5 million. Of course, you can set the tax rate at whatever amount you wanted to. It's just that if you go above the rollback rate, then you're at a point where citizens do have the opportunity to limit the tax increase. On slide 14, for us to adopt a tax rate that is above the effective rate, we would need to take a record vote specifying what the tax rate would be, publish notice date and time of two public hearings, hold the public hearings. Right now we've set aside time on September 5th and September 12th for those two public hearings, and then the vote on September the 18th. As summary on slide 15, you see the four rates there, our current rate, our proposed rate at 76.50, that's the rate that's included in the balanced budget, the effective rate, and the rollback rate. On slide 16, just the schedule. Today, we do have an agenda item for council to consider. It is not setting the tax rate. The tax rate is adopted on September the 18th. Today's action does not adopt the tax rate. It simply sets the maximum. It is setting the ceiling. Whatever you set today, you would not be able to go above, because once we notify citizens, we can't go above that. You could go lower than that. We do need to take a record vote today. If council wishes to consider a different rate than the one that's in the agenda item, we wrote the agenda item with the proposed rate, which is 76.50. You can make the amendment to go up, go down, whatever council's desire to do. The agenda item also calls the public hearing for September 5th and September 12th. If no vote were taken through this process, then the effective tax rate would be the highest tax rate that you would be able to adopt at 73.91. Again, the schedule is on slide 17. And I do want to point out a couple of things in the appendix. On slide 20 and 21, this is just a historical perspective of the tax rate. Slide 20 shows the cents per $100 valuation, and slide 21 shows it as a percent. And then I wanted to point out on slide 22, what we have here, and I'll explain it a little bit, on the left-hand side of the orange bar is the tax bill for fiscal years 15, 16, 17, and 18, assuming the average single-family residential property and the tax rate for that year. So in the current year, the average in fiscal year 18, which is just to the left of the orange bar, the tax bill for the city would be $1,553. That assumes about a $250,000 value home with our current tax rate of 78.04 cents. On the right-hand side of the bar, now our average value for a single-family residential property is $275,000. So we've applied different tax rates against the new value, $275,000. So if we kept the tax rate the same as the current year and the tax rate was 78.04, applied against our $275,000 average value, the tax bill would be $1,720. We have proposed a reduction in our tax rate by 1.54 cents. So again, applying $275,000 of value against our proposed tax rate of 76.50 cents, you would pay about $1,681 to the city of Dallas. If we adopted the effective tax rate, again, that's a lower tax rate than we have proposed right now. It would reduce your tax bill for the city of Dallas to $1,629. If we went up to the rollback rate, which is a higher rate than we have proposed right now, it would increase your tax bill. It's important to remember that the city of Dallas is only a portion of your tax bill. It doesn't include your tax bill for your school district, county, Parkland, et cetera. And slide 23 is just an example showing what revenue and what impact there would be on a tax bill for different amounts, 1 cent, 0.75 cent, 0.50, or 0.25, just as some point of reference or rule of thumb. So with that, I think we're going to shift to Mr. Fortune, who's going to go through the public safety strategic priority area. So John's making his way to the front.
In addition to our Assistant City Manager, John Fortune, we have the two chiefs of the major departments that make up the public safety strategic priority. Of course, our Police Department Chief Hall and our Fire Department Chief Coatney.
Good morning. Thank you for letting us come and talk to you this morning. We're going to go over the public safety budgets, and my name is John Fortune. I'm Assistant City Manager, and with me, as Elizabeth said, is Chief Coatney and Chief Hall, and we also have other staff available should there be questions about the other areas of the public safety budget that you have questions on later. I did want to just kind of mention that I know Elizabeth covered a lot of what I have to say, and so I'll try to go as quickly as I can through this because I don't want to repeat a lot of information, but we will start by talking specifically about some of the strategic priority objectives for public safety. We're going to talk about some of the budget highlights that we include not only in the 18-19 year but also in the 19-20 planned budget, and we'll also be discussing some of the organizational changes in a little more detail. The daily dedication and service from our officers and firefighters represents the high value that our organization places on public safety. And as Elizabeth mentioned to you earlier, at $105 million, public safety represents about 60% of the general fund budget. And in the fact that all of the property taxes and about 30% of the sales taxes are contributed to public safety, combined with the fact that our community is making public safety a high priority as reflected in the most recent community survey, I think this allocation speaks well for not only the City Council's commitment, but the public's commitment and expectations for public safety. If you were to combine all of the funds, including debt service and the capital projects that are allocated for city operations, public safety would represent 24% of the total budget. So as you're aware, public safety represents one of the six strategic priorities for the City of Dallas. And the strategic focus of all public safety operations is to enhance the welfare and general protection of residents, visitors, and businesses in Dallas. And this statement serves as the foundation for the operations and programs and initiatives for our employees as we strive to provide service first. Now, either in whole or by function, the departments represented in the funding amount that we just discussed are also represented in this chart. And that includes the City Attorney's Office. Now, this isn't the entire City Attorney's Office. This is those functions that are dedicated to municipal prosecution and legal liaison for the Police Department. Courts and Detention, which does include Municipal Court Services, the Marshal's Office, the City Detention Center, and as Elizabeth had mentioned a few minutes ago, the City Facility, Security Services, and now the School Crossing Guard Program. Obviously, Dallas Police and Dallas Fire Rescue, and the judiciary, which represents the funding and the operations of our courts, and finally, emergency management. On this next slide, we have the strategic priority budgets by department, and I will not go over this because it's right in front of you. And then on the next slide, you'll see the strategic priority by total operations dedicated to public safety. And I would just point out that the two additional components on this slide are the capital component, which is $42.5 million, as well as the debt service piece of $15 million. So now I want to talk a little bit about some of the strategic highlights in the budget. Obviously, our personnel is one of our highest valued resources, and the budget does include funding this year to provide an increase for police and fire in accordance with the third year of the current meet and confer contract. This includes a double step increase for those that are eligible. It's about a 10% jump, as well as a 2% increase for those officers or firefighters who are at the top of their steps currently. And Elizabeth already alluded to the fact that this would bring the starting pay to $51,688. Recruiting for both police and firefighters remains a high priority, and this chart represents the staffing numbers that we expect to see over the next two budget years. DFR has seen some progress in recruiting and hiring and is expected to see staffing levels increase by to 1,960 by October of 2020. And I would also just like to say that DPD has experienced some very positive results also, and the number of officers that we've hired this year will increase over the number of officers that we hired last year. Attrition, however, has stayed fairly flat, and we are not at the staffing levels that we had hoped to be at. So we're below our expectations, and we recognize that that is a challenge for us, and we want to continue to strive to look for ways in which we can improve that. And we'll talk a little bit about that in some of the programs and packages that we have here in just a few minutes. Moving forward, I would like to offer, though, that while we provided these numbers, and these are conservative estimates on where we think we could realistically get to, I would reiterate what Ms. Rach said about the goal is to hire as many officers as we can. And we don't see these as limiting factors, but rather starting points, and we would absolutely be working tirelessly to hire as many officers as we can. Elizabeth also mentioned a few minutes ago the fire and police pension contributions. That totals $156 million. We've already talked about the fact that we're consolidating security services into the Marshal's office. One of the things that I'd like to point out, though, is we will be conducting, this budget does contemplate conducting a comprehensive assessment for all city facilities. There are currently 165 city facilities, and 64 of them are high public traffic facilities, and we would like to conduct a comprehensive assessment of those buildings to make sure that not only is the public safe, but our employees as well. We talked about the school crossing guard program already, so I won't elaborate on that. And I would like to point out, though, that we are anticipating the continued implementation of the Right Care program. The Right Care, if you recall, is a program that joins a team of a police officer, firefighter, and some counseling services to address behavioral health calls in South Central Police District. In terms of equipment, the budget includes, the proposal includes an additional ambulance next year. This includes not only the equipment, the ambulance itself, but six firefighters. We intend to bring those firefighters online in October. However, we anticipate putting the ambulance in service as a frontline unit in April. And this will allow us to make sure that our overtime situation is stabilized and that we have adequate staffing to be able to implement that new service. We also are aware of the need to try to address some safety and some other operational concerns for the fire department. So included is some additional equipment for automatic chest compression devices to aid the EMS professionals and paramedics as they're providing life-saving services to citizens, as well as due to the fact that this, the type of environment that the firefighters are in, where they're exposed to a lot of unknown chemicals and dangers as they're in fires, we're including a plan to replace their bunker gear, not replace, but actually add to their bunker gear a full second set for each firefighter. And this will allow them to take one out of use while they get it cleaned and not have to be exposed to those elements. We do include also an additional dryer that will help in the aid of cleaning that equipment. Organizational changes, we've already talked a little bit about the school crossing guard program, but this will functionally be housed in the Marshal's office, which is a division of the courts and detention operations. And if I could, for just a minute, I wanted to highlight an important project that we see on the horizon next year, and I wanted to take an opportunity to mention the integrated health clinic. Most of you probably have seen or have heard of at some point a proposal from EdCorps Health to construct an integrated health clinic to support Southern Dallas residents who are currently living in a health care desert. The health clinic would, if developed, would provide these residents with improved access to not only general health care but behavioral health care. And the target area that they've identified for this clinic would be in the South Central Police District, which is the district of our law enforcement and public first responders that are receiving or currently being responding to the highest number of behavioral health calls. So we did brief the Public Safety Committee on this proposal back in June, and there was a very favorable response that staff had received to move forward and find a way to see if we could develop a proposal and come back to the City Council whereby the city could take some existing land that we have in this particular target area and use it as a donation to go with EdCorps's proposal to be able to develop this integrated health clinic. The appraised value is about $260,000 for the land, and we estimate with the city's use of the facility, we plan to have a presence in the building. We believe that we would more than recover that over the life of the lease term. And so I just wanted to mention that to you now. We plan to come back to you next month with more detailed information in terms of the terms and hopefully have an agreement that we can present to you that the City Council would approve. On the next slide, you'll see our Dallas 365 measures, and as you have time to absorb the budget and go through the material we provided to you, you'll see that we have changed a few of them, but by and large, you'll notice that response times and the level of crime, some of our more serious crimes, continue to be our target focus and how we measure our effectiveness. And so I won't belabor these by going over them in detail, but clearly we'll be standing aside here in a few moments and we'll be happy to address questions about them. Finally, on the 19-20 planned activities, I mentioned some areas in which we're trying to improve the recruiting and look for new methods in which we can make attractive coming to this police department. So we do include an officer down payment and relocation assistance program. Many of you are aware that we currently have an officer down payment program. Currently it's funded to address about 6 payments a year for an officer who's deciding to relocate and live within the city of Dallas. We'd like to expand that to over 40 a year. Also, we're including and proposing a relocation assistance program for up to $1,500 per officer who might choose to live and relocate into the city of Dallas who would come to the department as a new employee. Obviously, our focus for recruitment is in the state, but we also do have some very good opportunities that we continue to pursue outside of the state. And as we look for incentives to encourage and incentivize officers to relocate to Dallas, we think these would be helpful tools in that regard. The budget also contemplates staffing and funding for a new truck company in 2019 and 2020. This would be a new truck company for Station 18. The number of fire and EMS incidents have doubled since 2014 in the Central Business District, and we just believe in order to continue to maintain the response times and the level of activity that we're seeing in this area, a truck company is warranted, and this will certainly be an enhancement to the level of service in this area. And last but not least, just as important, I think, to the overall safety of the community is we continue to look for ways in which we can improve and enhance the coverage for our outdoor warning sirens. This is an important tool that we use to warn the community whenever there is imminent weather or other dangers impacting their area. And as the city has grown, we continue to study and look for areas in which improved coverage is necessary. And so the planned activities for 2020 include 6 new warning sirens. And then finally, as we talked about just a few minutes ago, 2020 would complete the second year of funding to completely replace and provide a second set of bunker gear for our firefighters. So I did kind of go through that fast. That doesn't mean we're going away. We're happy to sit here and have discussion with you and talk through your questions. And so with that, I will stop and then see how we can what your preference is.
Thank you. We'll take questions and comments now. I want to suggest, as we have these conversations, that we've got tomorrow, we've got all the sections on that we laid out earlier that we're going to talk about. Now, Elizabeth covered some of those things in the top line, but I would suggest, unless it's a major strategic issue, that we hold those comments till tomorrow, because we'll have discussions and we can get into the details on those things as just a thought, because the end result is to understand the public safety stuff and then to take this vote on the tax ceiling. Just one quick question, Ms. Rice. You said next year you're forecasting property tax to be at 6.5 or something like that. What did you forecast this year to be last year?
7.22.
Got it. So it was a couple of points higher than
right.
what we forecast. Thanks. Right. All right. Let's begin. Mr. Atkins.
I guess my first question is on the tax rate. We're talking about today, we're going to take the vote on the 14th. Is there any reason why we need to take that today? I'm just curious. I mean, why it was posted. I mean, because someone asked me why we had to take it today. I mean, we just getting the budget. We're trying to figure out if we take, if we lower it, if we raise it, we got to figure out what we cut, what we do not cut. So why did we put it on today before we have a complete briefing?
We have certain requirements in the state law regarding posting an advertisement and then having a certain number of days between when we post the advertisement to when you hold the public hearing, a certain number of days between the two public hearings, and a certain number of days after the second public hearing before you can take the final vote. So we have a little bit of flexibility, but not a lot of flexibility.
So what is the flexibility?
The flexibility is August 22nd.
We can do it August 22nd. We don't have to do it today.
That is true.
Okay. So I'm trying to make sure that's clear because we just got the brief on just getting into it. So when we go to the effective rate or the rollback rate, and the recommendation is to stay at
76.50 cents per 100 valuation.
Okay, 76.50, and the maximum rate is 78, right?
0.11.
Okay, so what's the difference in revenue?
About 20 million.
20 million. So if we stay at 76, we would have to decrease $20 million somewhere else, you know, 20 million or so, right?
The city manager's recommended budget
I know,
already
it's city,
incorporates
I understand.
76.50. Yes.
Right. So the budget that we're talking about today, what rate is it set at? The 76?
76.50.
Okay. If we go to the 78, what enhancement will we have?
That would be at council's direction.
I mean, but you should have that. I mean, if we stay at 78, what enhancement would we have?
About 20 million.
I know 20 million, though, but it would go to what department? So we would not know to go to parks, to go to streets. I mean, where do it go?
We have included in the effective tax rate scenario an additional request that we had for things that we were not able to fund in this annual budget that we would have if we had had additional resources. Most of those we were able to fund in the second year of the biennial, so we've listed them that we would move those up, and we can talk about that.
Okay.
If that's helpful.
A little bit. Page 21. The first line on 21, I think it was Liz.
Are you in the tax briefing?
No.
The mobility,
you're on
mobility solutions.
Right.
Or in
the first briefing.
The first briefing. Okay,
right.
So the main briefing on page 21, that's mobility solutions.
Right. Okay, the $125 million bond in cash, are you saying of the $125 million 61 to 62 million is for street repair. The other $60 million is for bond, the 2017 bond money.
What I'm saying is that $64 million is the cash investment. So that's general fund appropriations, as well as some of the transfers we get from water for recognition of their use of the roads, et cetera. So that's our cash investment, and that yes, the rest is bond money.
So the bond money would be the $60 million, which would be allocated throughout the city. It depends on what priority it is on the dashboard.
To be more technical than perhaps you want, $46.5 million is from 2017 bond fund appropriations. $14.8 million of this money I'm talking about is from the DWU pipeline replacement program. So the bond funding has two components.
Okay. Thank you. on page 19, when you look at the police budget, and you made a statement, you said that this is a budget, and if the police department need to hire more officers, the money will come from somewhere else. So can you define what you mean by that?
So as we, what I call execute a budget year,
right,
meaning we're making all of those execution decisions, we are forecasting our expenses and revenues throughout the year. And so we would be looking during that process as to where there are savings occurring throughout any department that we could then use for that purpose, or we would be looking to see if perhaps our property tax or sales tax revenues are coming in higher than anticipated, and we would be able to use that revenue. So those are the first places we would go before we would.
What I would like to know, if we decide to hire 250 to 500 officers, there's a cost.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, where would the money come from? Just in case. I mean, you ain't get back with me today, just in case, you know, I'm asking, if you had to hire 250 to 500 officers, where would the money come from?
Okay.
Okay. Page 22. The online one-stop shop for resident business, are we referring to this at Jefferson Street for permits?
This is an online system whereby people can submit plans, and whereby our city staff can review those plans electronically. It allows for simultaneous review. It makes more efficient use of staff time, and hopefully will speed up the permitting process. I certainly have others who are able to elaborate if you have more questions.
Is this in place now?
I'm going to allow David Cossum, the director of the Department of Sustainable Development and Construction, to address that.
Yes, sir. The online system is not currently in place. We're scheduled to go live with that system on October 1st of this year. We do have certain capacities to review plans electronically today through the utilization of the Q-team process. But this system is actually much broader than that. We'll allow applicants to submit online for any type of permit at that time. So it is scheduled to go live on October 1st.
October 1st, okay. And we do have a personnel, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Page 24. First line. Can you break this down again? You said that it would be like $5.6 million for management, and could you break that down again?
Absolutely. So currently, the budget, the expense side of the budget, is $14.7 million for Fair Park. So we would continue to spend that amount of money on Fair Park. The budget also has revenue of over $3 million that we receive from Fair Park. So both the expenses and the revenues in the management agreement would go to the management company, Fair Park First, the nonprofit. So when I talk about what we're spending, I'm accounting for the fact that not only, you know, that we would have to reduce it by that amount of revenue. So up to $5.6 million would be for management and operations. The agreement, if adopted by City Council, doesn't commence until the first day of the month following 45 days after the vote. So we're looking at December 1st, January 1st, you know, it certainly won't be October 1st. And so the agreement calls for us to, of course, leave city staff in place until the commencement date, and then to have them stay and pay for that for another 45 days to assist with the transition. And then, of course, there is an appropriation in the agreement. It's $4.5 million. It's prorated based on when the exact commencement date is. So when I say up to $5.6 million for management, we would have to figure out exactly what that split is between what we need for city staff and what we would give to the manager in an appropriation. There are also reserves. There is a $2 million transition reserve, $500,000 available in seed money for an operational reserve, The city would need to retain $1 million in a reserve for transition costs as well. The remainder, anything left, we would put towards funding the capital improvement plan. In the agreement, the manager is required every year to submit a capital improvement plan to the park department, and so we would look at funding about $5 million probably of that plan, but we would fund as much as we could in capital depending on how these other expenses, the management expenses work out, and that's largely dependent on the commencement date and how quickly council adopts or approves that contract if you do.
Okay. You keep on referring to the agreement. Have the council seen the agreement yet?
You have not received a briefing or received that for a vote yet.
So this is a staff recommendation?
It is.
Okay.
So what happens in the budget is we have budgeted the full $14.7 million in expenses in what is called the Fair Park line item or service, and we have budgeted the $3 million in revenue as coming into the city. So all of that is there, able to fund the operation at the current level. It also then we have broken out how it would be distributed if the agreement is adopted.
Okay. I guess, do you know when we will receive the agreement? Because you're talking about numbers, and those numbers, I know, can I calculate those numbers? I don't know if we can change those numbers or those numbers go away or whatever. So do you know when the council will see the agreement so we can look at that before while we're doing this budget?
The park board received the agreement, received a briefing on the agreement a week and a half ago. There was a public meeting last Thursday at Fair Park where the community attended and was able to talk about it. My impression of these meetings has been large scale support for moving forward in Fair Park. Of course, with a lot of talk about the need to engage the community and to involve community folks in the planning for the park, et cetera. So while there is discussion going on, I think that things are largely positive, at least from what I've heard. So at this point, we're looking to the park board to consider their thoughts on the agreement and then to make a recommendation for approval to City Council. And I don't know when the park board is doing that. They do have a meeting this Thursday. I'm planning to be in attendance. There has been discussion about whether they would consider it at that time.
So would this agreement affect our budget that we talk about now when we go to the citizen?
The agreement, yes, it does change
so,
the amount of money.
So therefore, we should have agreement before we adopt our budget. Is that a fair statement?
It is a fair statement, and I would say that the proposed budget can honor either way, because we have put the full amount of the revenue and the expense into the park department budget in the Fair Park line item. It is enough to cover everything included in the agreement.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Griggs.
Thank you, Mayor. I have three areas here for the first round. First, on public safety, I still continue to support giving an additional raise of 5% to our first responders, particularly I know with our police officers, how stretched we are right now. I believe that's in part we don't have enough officers because we've had issues with retention as well as hiring new officers. And certainly the only component of that isn't salary and pay, but that is an important component of that. And so I would certainly like to see even a further raise this next year. I know in the last, I think it's the 4 to 5 years, we've lost about 1,000 officers that have left the police force. So I'm very interested in that. I know right now our officers are going from call to call, and certainly in North Oak Cliff we've had, as in other areas of Dallas, a spike in violent crime, and I think that can be addressed by increasing the staffing of our police force and also retaining the experienced officers we already have. And I think you've done a great job with the budget TC, and so now I know it's on the council to work out this compromise, and I hope we can all get around a compromise on public safety and find a way to find some additional funds to give a further raise with certainly for me the target of being 5%. So I'll be working on that TC, and I understand from you, Mayor, through the budget process that initially we'll submit our amendments to the appropriate committees for consideration and try to work those out before we submit amendments one way or another from the floor. So that's the first point. The second point is one on public integrity, and it's difficult to see which category that fits in here, so I think it fits best for today. I think we're going to have to revisit our ethics this next year and our ethics policy as the Dallas City Council. So I certainly would like to see some funds set aside for that. I think on that, some areas that we'll need to look at, I would even like to bring in, hire a former FBI agent or someone experienced in law enforcement to take a look at our ethics policy and get recommendations from a law enforcement perspective on what we can do to improve things. I think we're going to have to go back and visit our records retention policy, particularly with how long we keep campaign finance reports, as well as how long we keep personal financial statements. So I would like, I know in the past there's been an expression that keeping the additional data takes some space, costs money. So I'd be interested in this budget, particularly from the state secretary's office. If we did go back, how much would it cost? I also think would like to get some type of estimate. We're going to have to go to an electronic filing system for our personal financial disclosure statements, as well as filing the electronic, filing conflicts of interest electronically, as well as having various matters that deal with zoning cases. Right now, it's listed in the back of every zoning case. There's a sheet called company officers of interest or persons of interest. Those should probably also be filed electronically, so then there could be a common database for parties of interest, for council members' financial interest statements, as well as conflict of interest statements. All those could be electronically searched. I think the fact that we do all three of these on paper doesn't speak well for the city. We haven't really kept up with technology in any respect in that way, and that would certainly go a long way towards transparency and accountability to have an electronic system for that. So if you have any idea on the cost of something like that would be in the next few weeks, I'd be interested to seeing that in the next budget. And even then, I know regularly we have a retreat. Oftentimes we have ethics experts come out and speak. I think on this one, if we want to get even someone from the FBI or law enforcement to come out and speak to us about things, that would be very welcome. So during this budget process, I'd like to start to get my arms around those numbers. I think we are going to need some ethics reforms. Another area we're going to have to look at is the gray area of being a lobbyist or a consultant while being a council member or being a CPC member or being a park board member. I know that's very much in our ethics rules right now, a gray area. What kind of protections can we put in that area, and what type of additional clarity do we need in ethics policy to make more of a bright line in those areas? So certainly this next year, ethics is something that I want to address, and I hope that the council will address. And some of it is going to have some budget items, PC, particularly on getting us an electronic system on many of these aspects that relate to ethics. So those numbers I'll be looking at in the next few weeks, trying to find the money for that. And lastly, PC, since Fair Park does impact the budget, I know we can go back and amend things. When do you expect Fair Park to come to the council, since I know under the RFP process, technically it is the city manager who has to place it on the agenda for council's consideration. I know you're working with the park board on that coming forward. Would you summarize where you think that is and when it will be coming to council? Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman. I think Elizabeth tried her best to kind of pretty much say it's really based on the timing of the consideration at Parks Board. I think during my conversations with the assistant city manager over the area, we had hoped that might come to council sometime in September, if not mid to early October would be our goal. But again, it depends on, I think, the speed at which the Parks Board reviews the item. I know as soon as they have finished their thoughts and recommendations, we would put that on the closest and or earliest agenda for council consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mayor. And I'm going to begin with, there's three sections here that we briefed, and but I just, Mr. Griggs made a really good point about ethics, and IDEL disagrees that we need to make sure all of our ethical standards are to the highest level possible and that we have this electronics. I don't know if that's going to require a budget or not, but I will just like to tell the, you know, I know it, we've all feel a lot of pain of what we've experienced this last week, but one of the things that we can keep corruption from happening at this city is that we all sit around here and make informed, educated decisions. Because if you would all ask those questions and back the idea that I had that we just briefed an issue, we could have avoided some of this. So making those informed decisions is our responsibility, and I ask all of us that we take it real seriously. And because when, you know, ethics can be broke, I mean, when people are willing to break the law, they're willing to break ethical, you know, responsibility to the city. But we have to take every one of our votes and stand behind it and figure out why we make them or not. All right. So public safety, Chief, so this number, what I heard from Ms. Reich was that she's willing to go beyond if we can recruit more officers, and she's going to find ways. That was one of my other questions, but she's talked about ways she could find the budget. Is there a number you're comfortable with or that you think we need to target for our officers?
One of the reasons that we have a staffing study in place is because I don't want to just throw out a number. We were at 3,600 officers, and that's the number that we keep hearing. But I'm not certain, sitting in this seat, that 3,600 officers allows us to address crime, community engagement, investigations, and all of those things that we have to do as a police department. So the staffing study will allow us to know exactly what it is that we need in order for us to properly service this city. So that's what we're looking at. The reason that these numbers are what they are, because they're realistic hiring goals for us. Based on attrition, we're looking at the numbers of individuals who have the service and the service level of retirement age in order to be able to leave the department, and our analysis is based on that. So that's where our numbers come from.
But you're willing to grow more if possible.
I would take 1,000 officers if they would come through the door. And the city manager has assured me that if I can get them through the door, they'd figure out how to pay for them.
Okay. Are there other ideas related to retention that you think we can incorporate in this budget? We've heard about in salary increase. Do you think that would help with retention? Or do you think – I'm looking to management to help us with this issue because I know we need more officers on the streets. Or could we do a bonus if we found more money? Is there anything else we could do?
Certainly, money is an incentive for those individuals who want to remain in law enforcement. It is difficult to get people into law enforcement all over the country, not just in Dallas. And when you're low paid, that makes it even much more difficult. So certainly an increase in salary or some type of bonus would incentivize staying in law enforcement. Now, that is no absolute guarantee, so I don't want you to sit in here next year and say, Chief, you said if you gave an increase, they'd stay. But it definitely is an incentive.
Is there any way, if we found money and ways to cut, because I'm going to go with the proposed rate, if I found ways to cut, that we could incorporate a bonus currently? Do you think,
I'm sorry, your question is?
Let's say we decide if there was a way to, you know, to bonus people in this budget.
Okay.
If we found $2,500, we could you know, could we do that?
Absolutely. If there's money.
If we could cut in other ways.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And then on page 11 in there, the clinic that's mentioned in the do we have money in the budget for that clinic then, or is that
the integrated health clinic?
Right, yeah.
That would be privately funded.
That's privately, okay.
And we would, our contribution would be the land.
Okay, so, and then land, so there would be a city contribution. But page 13 then, about the down payment, is there money in the budget for that?
That's in the 2019-2020 planned.
Okay, so that's not in this current.
That's not in the current, but there is, I will clarify though, there is funding in the current year budget for partial down payment assistance, and that's currently part of the meet and confer agreement. And I would just like to add that any changes that we might make or contemplate making to police or fire pay would require us to amend the meet and confer agreement for the current year.
Okay. All right, on page, now going back to the initial briefing, when you talk about the consolidating, reorganizing, and thank you, Mr. Brodnix, for getting that, there's lines in the budget that are zero going forward. Are all those being saved, or are they just being absorbed in other parts of the budget? It's like on...
I can't speak to the specific line items that are zeros as it relates to...
Like I was looking at departments. So could maybe we just have kind of a, like a memo saying what part was absorbed as savings and what part was just, absorbed in other budgets and what part was actually saved related to your reorganization?
Yes, we can do that. I think just for clarification, and so I'll ask Jack and Elizabeth to go back and we'll detail that. We've done that. The estimated savings, meaning not being absorbed in transition across the enterprise funds, I believe is around $750,000.
Right, that was what you said for water.
Correct.
But I was just wondering for like Trinity and...
Correct, we'll be able to get, able to detail out where those savings we're estimating and where it was repositioned in the new stormwater utility.
Okay, and then on page 21, the Alley Pilot Program, that's costing, I think you said, $1.8 million.
Yes.
And hopefully we'll see alley repairs. Is there also a coordination of efforts to, like, work better together to try to figure out if we can have a alley maintenance program, or is it just dollars to alleys?
It is a coordinated effort between the sanitation department, the water department, stormwater drainage, and public works to determine which alleys would receive the treatment. And so it's both vegetation and surface. And so there may be some alleys that don't need as much, don't need surface work, but certainly need the vegetation work to enable our sanitation trucks, for instance, to get down the alley effectively. So they will coordinate together and where they can work on the same alley, because again, the intention here is to determine how much it would cost in each of these alleys, and what it would take potentially to expand this. As the pilot at this point, they would certainly coordinate. The public works piece is also testing a new surface area for the roadway, and so part of it is testing out whether that new treatment is effective.
Okay, good. I'm excited about that program. I know my time's running out. So there's a couple other, like, enhancements or things you highlighted in the budget that I didn't see cost associated. I'm sure if I dig through. But if you, I'm going to go through these, and maybe if you can get these to me. Like, on page 23, the equity and human rights, where I can find the costs of, related to that. The aquatics and green space, the cost. I think I may have seen that going through. And I'm curious why the census... doing that is going to cost more, where we're putting that money. The cost of innovation on page 25, the availability and disparity, I thought we already budgeted for that study in last year's budget, so understanding where the new cost related to that is. And I think we have, I think I just was, you know, where the cost associated to those in the budget. I think I covered all of them. And then lastly, related to, like, the, you know, this, all the different types of taxes, the effects of the rollback and the proposed, on page 22, you know, it talks about that the roll, I mean, if you went with the effective, there's still an increase, but that's not necessarily true, right? That's only because the new includes all that new growth, but that would actually mean your tax bill would stay the same. Is that correct?
The effective tax rate is in aggregate. So it's
right.
The same amount of money coming in from property tax in both years. But if your individual value assessment went up, then your tax bill might go up. It's highly individual. We did these calculations based on the average home value of $275,000.
But why? I thought if the effective was keeping your tax bill the same. So if your home went up, it's rolling the rate back to equal that amount. Isn't that right? I mean, that's, so I was wondering why, like, the...
In concept, but for the individual taxpayer, it may not quite work out. But yes, that is the concept, yes.
All right. I bet that's, my time's up. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Kingston.
thank you, Mr. Mayor. Can we go to 19, please? On the first presentation, sorry. Elizabeth, you, I think Mr. Atkins asked this, but I'm sorry, I did not understand the answer. What is the other funding that would become available to pay more officers?
So, like anything, we would look at where we have savings that are coming in during the year. So any department that is forecasting to spend less than they had expected, we would look at whether revenues were coming in higher than expected, sales tax or property tax revenues, or any other unexpected revenues. Those would be the first places we would look at. Then you are right that we would have to look at, are there other things we need to do within the budget to keep the budget balanced, to find additional revenue. I will say, first of all, that the budget includes the resources to hire 255 police officers next year. And assumes
approximately 55 above attrition.
Actually, it assumes attrition of 249.
Oh, geez.
So, So hiring 255 would be hiring more than we hired this year, and they have been successful this year in hiring, I think it was more than 40 more than last year.
Yes.
So we're making strides in terms of recruitment and hiring, but there is an ambitious goal of 255 hires next year.
I would characterize the source of the funds that you describe as other funding for officers as budget crumbs. When did we approve the staffing study for DPD? September of last year?
The staffing study, there has not come for you for approval yet. It has not started.
No. Approved the funding for the staffing study
last
September.
Yes, sir.
We're waiting an awfully long time for this staffing. This better be a gold-plated staffing study when it shows up. I want it to tell me down to the nickel what it takes to retain and hire officers. Mr. Broadnax, some of this is going to sound negative, and I'm sorry about that, because we have to concentrate on the parts of the budget that aren't up to standard. 90% of what you've proposed here is very, very good, and the transparency is very good. Elizabeth is a quite capable presenter. So I want to not be perceived as critical of the budget in general. In general, this is a very fine budget, but there are some things we have to figure out. And one of them is the tax rate decrease that you have proposed is not what people are demanding. What people are demanding is police. People are not feeling ripped off by the city. They're feeling ripped off by the school board and by the state government, but not by the city. And I think our citizens would broadly support the idea of using some of the tax rate cut that you are proposing to fund the hiring of more officers and the increase in pay to retain them that Mr. Griggs has proposed, which I support. Can we go to 21, please? What is the level of funding for streets that leads us to zero degradation in the current streets?
I'd like to ask Majid Al-Ghafri, our assistant city manager, over that area to
Majid,
speak
as you're coming to the mic, the reason I'm asking is because we have received over the last 3 or 4 years a huge range of numbers about what is the level of streets funding that leads us to zero degradation. Initially, it was thought to be $68 million. The next year, it was tagged at $90 million. And then the next year, it was $118 million. After we had approved each of those numbers to reach supposedly zero degradation. So what's the number this year?
Good morning, Honorable Mayor and Council members. Based on the current pavement condition rating that we have, which is the A, B, C, D, and E, the number is where we have our maintenance program as well as the bond program. We will maintain a zero level of degradation. Now, I need to preface that by saying that it's such a wide range. So, for example, if we take the C range, which is an acceptable range and above, it goes between a pavement rating of 55 to 69. So any number that falls in between is an acceptable street. You may say that's great and dandy, but there's a huge difference. There's a huge difference between a 55 pavement condition rating and a 69 pavement condition rating. The real number is the real number is somewhere in the range of over $200 million if we go to specific pavement condition rating. If we go into that range, what we are spending in the bond program as well as the infrastructure management program is where we get zero pavement degradation.
Thank you, Manager. That was a detailed answer. And what it tells me is that what I've been told for the last 3 years about the funding required to reach zero degradation is bunk and utterly unreliable. I hope that next year, when you present to us a streets budget, that it will in some way relate to the number that you gave us this year. That would be a good goal for me. I am very happy to see the bike lane increase in infrastructure. I think we have all seen that our city is demanding more on-street facilities for bikes, and it is nice to see management finally responding to that. But let me tell you, this council adopted a bike plan in 2011 that was a 10-year plan that's supposed to be finished by 2021, and if we only go to $1 million this year, what we are telling the public is we are not going to fulfill that obligation to you. And despite the fact that you all are screaming at us for more bike infrastructure, we're just going to let that slide. You have already rhetorically conceded the point, Mr. Broadnax, that it needs to be at $2 million a year, so that needs to happen in this budget, and I will be submitting an amendment with a source of funding to be determined. Can we go to 22, please? I apologize, 23. What is the difference between the landlord incentive program and the master lease program? Because there is no line item in the comprehensive housing policy for a landlord incentive program that isn't the master lease program.
I'll ask our Assistant City Manager, Nadia Chandler-Hardy, to address that.
Thank you. The landlord incentive program deals primarily with addressing issues of risk mitigation as it relates to potential property damage that could happen while the tenant is occupying the unit.
Okay. Nadia, do you understand my process question? Where did this come from and when did we talk about it?
So this was part of our briefing, I believe, on August 1st. It went through a number of briefings with our Citizens Homelessness Commission, and staff shared it with City Council on August 1st as part of Track 3.
Got it. Okay. It was a little confusing because it literally is not in the comprehensive housing policy, and I guess it probably should be at this point. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
24, please. Mr. Broadnax, I've expressed this to you. You're going to have to allocate some money to prosecute animal cruelty cases. That will be an amendment that will be coming. Please be thinking about sources of funding. I'll look for them also. 25, I just want to say how important it is that we are funding Census 2020. The mayor has done a very good job of putting together a group to address that, but the reason that's important for our city is that we're plurality Latino. Latinos are the most undercounted group in the country, and if we don't do what we need to do to make sure they're counted, we're going to lose out on our fair share of federal funding. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Callahan.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mayor. Mr. Broadnax, I really like your budget. As I told you in the hallway yesterday, I think this is the absolute best one that we've had since I've been here. And I really don't want to cloud that with really negativity in any way, although there are certainly some things that it doesn't achieve, but that's due to the fact that there's only so much money. We're never going to be able to, I guess, get to zero degradation on every single problem or issue that we have within the city. But we are trending in the right direction, and that's really, I think, the clear difference with this budget and this plan is that the fact that it does at least put us on the road, the pathway to achieving some of these longstanding challenges that we've had, you know, neglect and deferred maintenance and problems that have been festering. So I'm encouraged that we're beginning to answer a lot of those. So, now that we've got a plan, I am still, though, concerned that we have, certain new facilities that come online
but yet we're not adequately maintaining the facilities that we already have. That's been an ongoing problem. It's great to get, and I was the beneficiary of a new aquatic center in Southeast Dallas. That's glorious. It was a great day for us on August the 4th. But we want to make sure that that facility is maintained, that the other facilities that we've got, not only in my district but around the city, are maintained in an appropriate way. Because I just believe that ultimately it costs you more money when you don't. You know, if you're going to allow black mold to set in and roofs to cave in and air conditioners and their curbs that they sit on that are not maintained, all of those are challenges, and it creates architectural difficulties. It creates problems, you know, with historical value of some of those property and so forth. So that was just my introductory comment. I'd like to shift with the time I've got to public safety, and I'd like to consider yet more pay increase for our police officers. That's something I definitely want to do. And what is currently the recruitment budget that we have, Chief, and or Elizabeth, whichever one of you want to answer that?
Let me get those numbers. So you're looking at salaries in the recruiting area?
Yeah, recruiting new officers, and what would that be?
Well, the salary currently of the recruit is $49,000, and with salaries and benefits, that's roughly about.
I wasn't asking the salary, just the recruitment budget that you have. You know, what amount of dollars do you have to go out and recruit? What is the line item for recruitment?
Donzel, can you help us out with that number?
Absolutely. It's about $250,000.
$250,000.
That includes advertisements.
Okay. Do you feel like that is a fair amount of money to be able to get the job done, an adequate amount of money?
I think that's an adequate amount of money based on the fact that of what we are projecting to be able to recruit. Absolutely.
All right. And this is a question for both you and Chief Coatney. Let me back up just a moment. Sir. Yeah, I guess my general question would be, do you have everything that you believe in your department to do the job and do that successfully? If not, why not? What would you change?
You know, as a police chief, you always want to be able to have every resource that you need. Currently, one of our biggest challenges is manpower and recruiting. And as I've said before, sitting at this table, is recruiting is difficult across the country. And if we don't have a competitive salary with the Metroplex and other metropolitan cities in the state of Texas, we then come in a little bit short as it relates to recruiting. So what we need to be able to do is be competitive from a salary standpoint in order to put ourselves in a position to be able to recruit alongside of our partners that's in the Metroplex. So those are some of the things that we absolutely need in order for us to have an opportunity to realize some increases.
Let me stop you there, and we'll have Chief Coatney answer that same question.
Good morning. So to start with, our budget for recruiting is about $68,000. So it's about a third of what DPD uses, but then they have a much larger department than we do. As far as all the resources, you know, going through the regular budget process, we ask for all the resources. We tell the city manager what all our needs are, and then he has to go through and prioritize what overall the city needs are. I believe we're keeping pace with the growth. We could always use more as far as adequate resources to provide to the city. I think we've outlined those to the city manager, and he's forecasted it out in coming years for us to get that. As far as retention of our employees, that's a big concern for us. Just like the police department, it's not just the retirements. It's the folks who are leaving who have 5, 8, 10 years in the department. And if you compare our retirements to our folks that are just leaving, that's about 50% of people walking out the door to go to another job in the Metroplex is about 50% of the number of our retirements. So salary is obviously important to us. I think the meet and confer process that we're getting ready to move forward into will provide us an opportunity to look at that with a little bit more depth, and that should be able to provide us not only that, but other components that we've seen on our exit interviews with our folks who are leaving to go ahead and address those concerns.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Kingston asked the question I asked, but I just wonder where the funds were sitting if we were to hire another 250 officers. But have you performed an analysis, Chief or Elizabeth, on the fact that we're about $600 or $700 officers short, and obviously we've inured a savings because we're not spending for those $600 or $700. Couldn't some of those funds be utilized to pay officers more money?
So those funds are being utilized in many ways. One of them is for overtime in the departments, to fill in some gaps. And so that's part of it. And then last year we had a large discussion about the fact that with the $40 million more we would need to put into the pension versus what we would have needed to put in this current year. Much of that was coming from the fact that our staffing numbers were lower. So what we said at the time was we were able to present a budget for this current year that did not have a tax increase and did not have significant service cuts, and we were able to fund the $40 million increase to the pension, but we did that because we had those savings on the salary side. So in future years, as we're able to recover from things on the staffing side, we may have more difficult choices to make.
Yeah, I think that's a fair answer. I mean, obviously, since we're spending more money on the overtime side, that kind of cuts into our ability to pay officers more because we still have the same need to put, you know, so many people on the street. I want to close my comments because I have very limited time with the ethical equation there, and I just want to say that, you know, the Holy Scripture says, you know, let your yes be yes and your no be no, and that really, it's where ethics begin. It's about personal responsibility. And I would challenge all my clients, you know, to avoid cronyism and avoid influence buyers in any way. And as Ms. Gates illustrated, you know, inform yourself and ask questions and go beyond just the briefings there. And certainly don't trade votes for contributions and don't mislead people. You know, tell people the truth and honor your word. I'm all for more rules, but I'm also for enforcing and obeying the current rules that we have. And file a report sometime. You know, I think every single time that I've filed a report in my 5 years, it's been on time, but yet many of my colleagues have not done. So it's just time to exercise full disclosure. Also, when you give people that apply for the city, you know, the come down for zoning requests and so forth, and when you give people your word, keep your word. Don't change your word from one day to the next. So that's very important. Thank you.
Mr. Thomas.
Thanks, Mayor. TC, I want to thank you for putting together a very easy to understand a budget, not only for us who look at this on a regular basis, but for our constituents and the citizens. Elizabeth, for your hard work as well, and everyone who had a role to play in this this budget. I just have a few questions because I know we're going to do a deep dive tomorrow and in our committee meetings. Before I do that, colleagues, especially those who are on the Human and Social Needs Committee, I ask that you respect the request of the mayor that any amendments that you would recommend, that you definitely we submit those to me, and we address those through the committee. If you're not on the committee and you see something that falls on the Human and Social Needs, I ask that you also respect that. First question, does a reduction in the combined tax rate decrease the number of services that were provided last year?
No.
Okay. Excellent. One of the main things at each of the town hall meetings that I host, I asked specifically about the level of services, and would you be willing to sacrifice the level of services for an increase here, an increase there, and across the board? At least the constituents of District 3 who attended and gave feedback said no. They appreciate the level of services, and so I wanted to make sure that any proposed changes to that doesn't affect those services. Page, we'll start with 24. And this is in the first section. Thank you. Those six spray grounds, could you tell me what those are? Or is someone here from Park and Rec who could do that?
I'm going to have to ask somebody from Park and Recreation to outline those. I don't have the list in front of me. Looks like Joey Zapata, our assistant city manager, has an answer.
Okay.
Councilman, I don't have those at my fingertip, but I will have them in a few minutes. Do you want to continue and I'll jump
yeah,
in?
Yeah, I have just a couple more questions. So if you could find that and then
I
come
will,
back.
And I'll give them just a second.
All right, I appreciate it. Page 9. Okay, this one is regarding the right program. So
in the first briefing, Chelsea.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess page 10. Page 9 was already answered. I think and Chief, I want to hear from you about this. I think this has played a critical role, and it's hard to say how many potential police-involved shootings or how many police-involved incidents have been prevented, but I think this was critical because you have individuals who have expertise in dealing with individuals who have mental challenges, where we have officers who don't have that level of training or experience, who are able to go out on these calls and know what's going on with an individual because of their expertise and their experience. So Chief, just kind of talk to me about how you feel this program has been helpful in preventing these type of incidents. Yeah.
The Right Care Program. Mm-hmm. The Right Quick Care Program is excellent because it does. I think you spoke to it. It gives firefighters, the police officers, and our mental health professionals an opportunity to assess these individuals and get them the assistance that they need. Sometimes in law enforcement, we're not able to identify what those needs are or if an individual is suffering from some sort of mental illness. So having those pieces in the right place assist us and make sure that we make the right decisions from a law enforcement standpoint.
Thank you, Chief. Page 11, and I'm almost done. The Integrated Health Clinic, I want to commend Councilman Magoo and those who've worked close on this. There's been a need for something of this nature in Southern Dallas for a long time, and the fact that there's land that's available. I met with Community Council of Greater Dallas and a number of CEOs of medical health facilities, and this was a conversation that they were having. And so there's definitely interest out there. I don't know how many of the CEOs of some of our hospitals and medical centers you've had conversations with regarding this, but I know there's interest there, and they would be interested in making this happen. So I wanted to share that. And two more. Oh, no, last one, page 25. Since it's 2020, you know, colleagues, I got to be real. I got to be honest. I'm hearing a lot of talk about how important a census is. And you may or may not know. I know sometimes we don't read the memos. The mayor appointed me chair of this committee, but no one's coming to me and talking to me about this. We're getting ready to have our first complete count census committee. And so I've said it a number of times. This is critical. If you have ideas, suggestions, we have council members who didn't even make recommendations on the committee. So we have vacancies. So if you have names, come and see me. Email me, text me, send me the information, because we're having our first meeting tomorrow, and all of you are invited at 4:30 with the complete count committee. Joe, if you could give me those six, and I'm done.
Yes, sir, Councilman. The six playgrounds are located at Grauweiler Park, J.C. Zaragoza Park, K.D. Polk Park, Kleberg Park, Nash Davis Park, and Timber Glen Park.
Okay, and if you give me a status on the one that's projected for Park in the Woods, Rex Center, I appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Felder.
Yes. Joey, you can stay up the microphone, because I recall that X-Line Park was one of the spray parks. Can you explain that to me, please?
So there are four aquatic center projects. So Mr. Thomas's question was about spray grounds. There are four aquatic center projects scheduled to be completed summer 2020 instead of 21-22, and that includes the expansion of the current Bahama Beach space, replacements of pools with new neighborhood family aquatic centers at Harry Stone and X Line, and phase one of the new additional regional aquatic center at Bahama Beach.
And I do recall having discussion and debate. Many of us were concerned about the timeline, and we asked Willis to move up, if he could have Kimley Horn to move up the timeline to 2019 as opposed to 2020. What happened to that?
The timelines were moved up, again, for the spray grounds by a year, and then for the other centers also by a year, from 22 to 20.
Okay. I'll speak with you and Willis offline.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. All right, so I want to go to economic development. I'm sorry, economic and neighborhood vitality, page 22. So the first thing I want to talk about, the $1 million for underserved areas. I need a breakdown on that, and how will the money be divided among the council districts?
I'd like to ask Mr. Broadnax or Raquel Favela to address that.
Thank you, council member. So we do not have a breakdown by district specific. One of the things that as we're developing the types of, engagements and or mitigation strategies is we'll be looking at our housing policy, particularly those areas that we talked about that we will not be investing significant housing dollars in because they're not ready, to figure out what kind of quality of life related improvements. And so as we've worked in, for example, I think John Fortune can probably speak to this more than I can, in District 4, as we talked a few weeks ago around certain hot spots. We'll be looking throughout the city in various council districts where we've worked with the council member as well as their community to figure out where we need to spend some time and invest, consistent with, I think, some of the things that speak to issues in our MVA. So we do not allocate it across the 13 or 14 districts that have that need, but every district that we've identified that has those types of pockets, we'll be looking to figure out how we deploy those resources and tools there.
Okay. And, you know, while we're speaking, I find that your budget is very comprehensive and very inclusive, and so I appreciate, you know, all the thoughtfulness that went out into your budget.
Thank you.
So let me move on. Same page, 22. Can we explain the $100,000 to conduct a historic resource survey and with private partners? And who are the partners and how were they selected?
Majid Al-Ghafri is going to find our staff who can address that, I believe.
I'll actually ask David Costum to answer the question on a more comprehensive basis, but what we don't have right now is a comprehensive survey that tells us all of the areas that are part of the activities for landmark or part of the designation for historic preservation or historic designation. So that's what we wanted to do, is we wanted to make sure that we do have a full overlay of that. So, one, the property owners and the public know what those areas are, and two, for us to have more of a predictability on processing those in the future.
That's all very, very accurate. It's primarily to help us identify areas that might be suitable for consideration of historic districts, but it also plays a role in the demolition delay overlays that Council amended the ordinance to include and has adopted four of to date, that if they appear on the survey, then it could trigger an additional review period prior to any demolition being permitted.
Okay. So what I would appreciate if you guys would give me a little bit more detailed answer with some information, because that's kind of a broad picture of what I've asked. So
offline, would you please give me that information? Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Still on quality of life, $650 million for neighborhood code reps. Need to know how they will be deployed and to what districts.
Chris Sweckard, who is currently the director of code compliance.
Stop the clock.
Mr. Felder, we are currently using neighborhood code reps who were previously in some of the northern districts. We're double dipping basically in the south. We've got two based on the number of community meetings that we're attending and the needs of those communities. So we want to backfill into some of the northern districts with these reps as well as bolster our forces in the south.
Well, I want to claim at least one of them.
Yes, sir.
All right. So next item is same page, 24, quality of life, $410 million for aggressive and dangerous animal team. Again, how many employees and where will they be deployed?
There are five total employees, four staff, one supervisor for that team.
Okay, great. So you have anyone from that department?
Yes. Nadia Chandler Hardy can address any additional questions on that. Oh, and we have Ed Jameson, Director of Animal Services.
Go ahead, Ed.
Talking about the aggressive and dangerous dog team?
Yes.
Yes, this would be our teams currently were a huge piece in the increase in loose dog pickup. This would be an operations team specializing in aggressive dogs being deployed in areas of high bite areas to try to preemptively get on top of dog bites.
Okay. Obviously, you know that District 7 is one of those areas that continues to have those attacks. And can you go ahead and tell us where you are with the renovation of the service center inside of District 7?
The service center is on hold. There was vandalism, and it, I think, almost tripled the cost of what we were what it was going to take to get in there. So it's currently on hold.
Okay. We'll speak offline. All right, last, public safety. I want to start with fire. Chief, how many extractors does the department have?
I can get that exact number. I don't have it off the top of my head. I believe it's 19, but I'll find out.
All right. And then I want to talk to you about, okay, the other thing is, what is your budget for extractors? Do you have that?
We don't have an individual line item for extractors. It's buried into our equipment. I can find out how much we spent on it.
Okay. Well, let me encourage you to get a budget for extractors because, you know, we've had this conversation with regard to the scientific evidence that has proven that not cleaning that equipment when a firefighter comes off has contributed to cancer. And several of the firefighters throughout the country have died because of that. And I continue to talk to you about that issue. Also, with regard to your fire stations, there's issues with heat, air, mold, plumbing, electrical, and rodents. Talk to me about that. What are you doing about that?
All those items have been turned in through EBS for repair. And EBS addresses the issues as they come out, and they're placed in a queue for things to be repaired. Chief Artis has come in. He's over our equipment and supply and also the fire stations. He can address specific questions regarding fire station repair.
Well, and Chief, if I could pipe up just a little bit here, I would like to point out that in the budget that we discussed, there's a $42 million capital program dedicated for public safety, of which includes several new fire stations, as well as significant renovations and improvements to a number of our fire stations. Now, it doesn't address HVAC in all of those stations, but it's certainly a top priority that those stations that have HVAC issues, that we try to address those through these bond funds.
Well, let me say this, Mr. Fortune. I'm getting calls and emails from my community, from District 7, fire station number 53. We've got neighbors going and buying window AC units to put in fire station 53. We also know that this past winter, the heat went out and nobody fixed it. And so we got neighbors, again, putting portable heaters inside of a fire station. That's unacceptable.
Well, it's our top priority to make sure we address those needs for sure.
All right. So last we're going to do the police.
Chief Hall, what would you say is the appropriate number of officers that you need?
I think I've answered that, Councilman. My recommendation, I don't have a recommendation at this point. We're using a staffing study so that I can be accurate. As I said before, we keep throwing out number 3,600. I don't know that that's the number. It could be the number, but right now we are not able to take into consideration all calls for service, community engagement, investigations. So we have hired someone to we are in the process of procuring and negotiating for someone to be able to come in and give us exactly what we need in order to be able to adequately give you that number. I don't want to just throw out a number because I'm not certain that that's the number that we would need, that 3,600 number.
Let me ask you another question. What do you feel is the appropriate budget for your department?
Well, I can say the budget that I have in place has been adequately laid out and provided the things that we need. Once we figure out the number that of officers that we need, I think the city manager will ensure that we have that number available to hire.
Okay. I want to go back to Jack Ireland. Jack, you talked about the budget, the overall budget. Can you put your pie chart up, please?
Of the revenues and expenses?
Yes, revenues and expenses.
Okay. 27 on the first presentation.
As it relates to public safety. And we know that public safety is 60% of the budget, correct?
That's right.
Okay. So what I'm looking for is where the property tax revenues, what are they feeding back into the general fund in terms of taxes, property taxes? Because I want to make sure that I'm clear on this. Go back to John Fortune. What percentage of fire and police live outside the city of Dallas?
Sir, I don't have that information. I'm sorry.
Would it be 80%?
I would just be guessing. I don't have any basis.
Let me say 80%. So let me make it clear. I support an increase in fire, an increase in police in terms of the budget and the pay. But they're going to have to give back. We can't. Okay, let me finish this. The bottom line is the pie has to expand in order to continue to give them the increases that they need to be competitive. But at the same time, and I'm talking, and I've said this from the very beginning, the new hires are going to have to live in the city of Dallas in order for the pie to increase.
Thank you.
We can't keep giving this away.
Thank you. Mr. Kleiman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. And I want to thank UTC and Elizabeth and Jack for preparing a very clear budget. Over the last several years, I think we've seen dramatic improvements, but actually since the addition of TC and your staff, I think it has become much more clear how the budget is structured, where the money's coming from, where it's going to, and it really helps us as council members, and I think it helps our citizens quite a bit to understand how the money is being spent. We can look at slide 16 on the first, the second section where we talk about the tax rate recap. The second to the bottom bullet says effective general fund rate plus 8% plus necessary rate to pay debt service. So the that's for the rollback rate. What percentage are we in the manager's proposed budget? If we're not 8%, which is the rollback rate, what percentage are we?
We'll get that for you.
Okay. I would appreciate that. I tried to do that math, but I couldn't quite do it. But obviously that is going to be pertinent when we meet with the legislature to talk about changes in the rollback rate. So it's going to be important to know where we are proposed. If we look at some of the organizational changes, I guess this is now in section 3, page 11, where we talked about, John, we talked about the IHC, the Integrated Health Clinic. what are we trying to accomplish? Well, first of all, I think it's a great idea, and as I know you talked a little bit about, you know, health, healthcare deserts, but we have done some things. I know Parks Department works very closely with Baylor at the Juanita Craft Clinic and Center and other places. But in this particular case, what are we looking to offset, or are we looking to do?
Well, as we've already talked about, in terms of even Right Care, for instance, there's this particular area experiences currently the highest number of behavioral health calls that our first responders have to respond to. And so I think the idea that really helps kind of supplement the Right Care program is having a facility that actually has services in this particular region or this particular targeted area. And so the EdCorps, which is a nonprofit entity, is going to be conducting, or they have conducted, some RFPs to see what kind of interest that they can obtain from entities wanting to provide these types of health and behavioral health services. And so it would be directly attributed to this particular region.
And why would the county not be doing this, since they provide health care for the area? Why is this a city responsibility?
Well, I'm not suggesting that the county is not going to be involved. I don't know what involvement they would have. I will tell you, with EdCorps, I can tell you that from the city's perspective, this we were approached with an opportunity to participate through land that we currently own, and so our involvement would be the contribution of land. I think at some point in the future, though, there may be some services that we might want to provide out of the clinic as it relates to sobering services or other things that we see would help a dramatic.
So if we provide services there, does it offset some other services or needs or things where we're doing other work?
I think the idea would be is that as residents or citizens are able to take advantage of the services at this clinic, it would relieve the burden that currently we currently see and experience with through public safety and through first responders, as well as provide those residents.
Like relieve some of the burden of the EMS calls and stuff like that?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
So based on recent opinion from the city attorney, are we allowed to relieve any of that work from EMS? I mean, Chief Cutney and I had a discussion about potentially looking at using private ambulance for transport, and I was told that, no, we cannot do that.
So this wouldn't be a situation where a resident would, and a different entity would be providing that type of service. This would be an entity where an individual.
This might offset an EMS call because they go to the clinic as opposed to calling us to take them to Park One.
Well, our goal would be to reduce the number of EMS calls in any way we can. And
but
so that
we can't reduce EMS calls by spending money in other places, according to our meet and confer contract. Is that my understanding? I mean, you sent me a memo that's their work. It doesn't really matter what the citizens need, right? So which is it? Can we have our EMS officers do non-critical things like transport? I'm sorry, can we outsource non-critical things like transport or clinic services or not?
So
what's the difference?
So the difference is in the meet and confer contract, it refers to not using a private entity to contract with a private entity to provide EMS services.
Right.
The Integrated Health Clinic isn't an EMS service, nor is it intended to be an EMS service. So they're apples to oranges. They're not related.
Is transporting somebody to a doctor's appointment a critical EMS service?
We're not proposing to transport them
but
to.
But we do it every day.
We transport.
I'll
let the chief respond.
They call in. I've got an appointment.
We transport people to hospitals. We don't transport them to doctor's offices. Only emergency departments do we transport them to.
Okay. Just really concerned about that area. Let's see. On page 13, I see we're going to purchase some more fire trucks. Fire truck for downtown. So I know we've had some increase in the amount of service in downtown, you suggested. What is the breakdown between EMS and fire calls in that facility in the increase?
In that particular, well, the majority of our calls are always EMS.
So why are we buying another truck? Why aren't we getting another ambulance?
You have significant fire potential in the downtown area with the high rises, and you have to have adequate resources to manage that type of call volume.
Camped out in downtown as opposed to bringing them in from all the stations that are around downtown. It seems to me that we always are pursuing this red iron situation as opposed to getting staffing and equipment that meets 80% of our need. I'm really concerned about that.
We actually pursue both, council member. We pursue EMS units and fire apparatus.
Let's see. On page 23, I do want to commend Chief, about receiving the ISO Class 1 rating. I think that is really important. I know that also we've made continuous efforts to have as much of our personnel be paramedics, and I think that's also important for our citizens. So I do want to give you kudos in that area. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McGue.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So in budget discussions leading up to this point, I get really two main comments. The first has been reduce our property taxes. I mean, that's, I get it constantly in every level. But since the budget came out on Friday and since we've had some of these other discussions, I've been having phone calls and neighborhood association meetings and everything else. And the even in some of my most conservative citizens are saying we need to pay our police and fire. And that I have to listen first, right? That's our job. And so I go through this budget and I look at, you know, we don't know the answer, as we've talked about a lot, on how to hire more officers. But we know one of the steps is dealing with salaries, but we need to look at, and we've asked, I mean, I want to know the staffing study too. I want to know that magic number we're shooting for. And more than anything, I want to know how to get there. And so, and whatever I think this council can do to help us get us there, I think we'll do it. I just don't know what that is yet. And so as we can continue, you know, I hear $250,000 for recruiting. I don't know if that's enough. You know, I think we need to have more discussions about that. But it's important to get more officers, and it's important to take care of our police and fire that are there. And so I'm supportive of additional raises for our police and fire. Need to figure out where that money's coming from. I think there's a number of areas I'm starting to look. I don't want to try to make where those amendments will be yet, but I know there'll be some coming both through my committee and others. I have a couple questions, though, I want to ask Chief Coatney specifically. In the proposed budget, we have one of the savings that you included was delaying the paramedic school. Could you please explain a little bit more about what that means or the impact that that would have on your department?
Yes, I'll explain the rationale to get there, and then we can talk about impact. Basically, when we were looking at our overall budget, as you'll recall, this year we've exceeded our overtime expenses significantly. And as part of that, and we started looking at potential reductions, we had a number of probabilities and possibilities that we put on the table, but we had to vet those out as far as reasonableness of implementing those and any potential service impact they would have. Because of the way we provide services, the majority of any significant reduction in our department impacts service delivery. This adjustment doesn't impact external service delivery. If we were to delay the paramedic class, our response times remain the same throughout the city. We're not doing rolling brownouts or anything like that within the city. That said, it does delay us from training our paramedics. We've done this before. It was one time before, about two meet and confer agreements ago, I believe, and we're still trying to catch up from that delay from that time. So while it's not an ideal choice, we do have to have a commitment to have, in effect, skin in the game on trying to do the reduction in the overtime savings. And so this was the most logical way we could approach it at that time.
And so you said the impact of that?
So the impact of that is, as I talked about and alluded to with our attrition rate, about 50% of our attrition, so if we just talk about our total attrition last year, 61 people retired, 32 just quit the city, quit working for the city and went to work for other organizations around us. So I'm not taking into effect the other folks that left for other various reasons. There are a number of folks who the benefit of having that regular paramedic class is as we train new paramedics, we're allowing other people to stop working on the rescue and just to go and be assigned to fire. They're still going to make EMS calls on the fire unit, but they're not on the rescue, so it gives them a break because the volume of work is significantly higher on the EMS side of the house than on the fire side of the house. So they look forward to that respite and that opportunity to get off that unit. So a delay in training our paramedics actually requires them to be on that rescue unit longer. And so there are concerns that have been expressed that it'll impact our morale within the organization and maybe cause some more less tenured members, people with 10 years or less in the department, to possibly leave the organization.
Okay, and that's the part I'm concerned about, and that's the part I'm hearing about. And so I'm going to, again, I'll ask for your help over the next couple of weeks to figure out somewhere else. I'm not going to support reducing or delaying the paramedic school at this point in time, at least that component of the budget. Similarly, I know when I saw in here that we have purchasing apparatus. Have we looked at other financing options to deal with how we could potentially get apparatus, whether it's leaseback programs or whatever else, and what would be the feasibility of doing that?
We know there are some leaseback programs. We've been evaluating those in the past. We haven't gotten the exact numbers, but what I'll do, council members, over the next couple of weeks, we'll get a finite number on the leaseback programs, and I'll go ahead and have my staff, we'll sit down, we'll go through our budget again. You want us to bring other options to you, you're saying?
Please.
Okay. We'll do that.
All right. And then the last thing on fire was, I know and I appreciate TC and the, everybody for putting in, starting next year, the backup bunker gear. My request, though, is we start that in this year's budget and start the same phasing but start it sooner rather than later. And so I understand there's a financial impact for that as well, and I'm going to be looking for that part of it as well. All right. Whole series of questions here. I'll get to what I can get to. We have in here $1 million for, looks more like security, a security program, or to look at security of some of our city buildings. Can someone give me a little bit more information about what that is?
Yes, it's a complete assessment of it. It looks at all of the city facilities, but it's currently going to drive a little deeper into 64 of the current buildings that have the highest level of public foot traffic, if you will. This would include not only a study, but also some equipment that we would use to scan and x-ray mail, and it includes one FTE to manage that program.
Okay, is there already a list of those 64 facilities we're looking at? Or
I believe we do have the list. I don't have it in front of me, but we can certainly provide that.
And is there a timeline on hiring that consultant and what that the timeline for getting that report done?
I don't have the information on the timeline with me, but we'll provide that to you in some of our responses.
Okay. What's the amount of money we spent in overtime, specific on police, last year?
On overtime last year. Let me look.
I have it. Our actual spending last year for police was $26 million. The budget for this year is about $21 million. Oh, actually, I'm sorry. The forecast for this year is about $25
million. So we think we're going to spend less on overtime next year than we did this year?
The proposed budget has $24.1 million. The forecast for this year is $24.9 million, so, yes, that's $800,000 less.
Wait, you said we spent $26 million last year.
We spent $26 million in fiscal year 2017 that ended last September 30th. Our projection for what we'll spend for this fiscal year ending September 30th is almost $25 million. So the budget for next year calls for $24.1
million. Okay. And why do we think we can reduce that number, or what does that look like?
One of the things we did, I'm not sure, Elizabeth, you know, we incorporated an additional $3 million savings that we rolled into this year's overtime budget from some savings that we had last year. So I'm thinking that's incorporated. The reason that that is a forecasted budget, because we did roll some additional fundings into the overtime budget.
Okay. I'll go back to what some of my colleagues have already talked about, but this idea of we're just going to find additional money to hire more officers, you know, ideally we should already have that staffing number in mind, and we should be budgeting towards that, and we should look that way. It doesn't feel very comfortable on this end to say, oh yeah, and as we tell our constituents, you know, we'll hire as many as we can. We know we need 600 or 500 or 1,000 or whatever the number is. And we'll just find the money, because that mentality is then, oh, well, when whatever issue comes up, we can just find the money. And it's not that easy, at least from this end, trying to find the money where to cut and how to put it where we need to put it. So I would just really appreciate more clarity on what is the actual number? This was the first time I saw 255. We're just trying to get, you know, six officers over attrition. And if that's what we're putting out there as our goal, that's, in my opinion, not enough. And so I want to get more clarity around how to figure out those numbers.
I think just to understand, when we look at 255, we also have to look at attrition. We are realistic in our ability to hire. We do not want to just project a number that would satisfy citizens or this council if it's not realistic. And so that is where we're trying to make sure that we're hiring above what we're attriting. We have a police department that has approximately 284 and 240 plus each year that can retire, and in some instances will. So we have an aggressive, very robust recruiting process in place. We are doing every single thing that we possibly can in order to get people through the door. And we just employ that if there is something that we are not doing, we would implement it tomorrow if you would come up with it. We are, from marketing and branding, we are looking at other agencies across the country. I just came from a conference where we sit and have roundtable discussions about how to hire, who to hire, and we're all struggling with that same concept. So being unrealistic and putting a larger number out there is not the strategy that we need. We need to be able to hire, and so we're looking at realistically how we're able to do that and if we can. And money is an issue, and we don't back away from that. But there are also other things that we must consider, and that law enforcement is difficult today to recruit to.
I hear you and support you and want to figure out how to help. That's the key right here. So if there's something that you need budgetarily, then we need to know that sooner rather than later as well. Right now, all I hear is we can raise salaries. So that's what we've got to do.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Narvaez.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to start off with an excellent budget, TC. I'm very happy with the vast majority of it. There's a few things that I'm going to ask, and I think you've heard them all. I think everybody's kind of repeated them, so I'm just not going to go deeply into it. But on police and fire, since the budget came out on Friday, I've had countless meetings and public events, and I haven't met a single person that said, I want that savings on my tax rate. They're like, I'd rather pay that money and get the officers paid. That's what they're all saying. So just, you know, FYI. In District 6, I'm hearing it loud and clear. My one question is, what is the average starting pay of police officers and firefighters in our region right now?
The average, we've done a market analysis.
Right.
And
the average starting is $59,752. Now, let me just say, that includes not just the region, but that includes some of the major big cities in Texas.
So 59, and we're coming in at 51 for our starting rate. And I know that's a 16% increase, but I think if we can use some of that money, if the citizens are saying pay our officers, again, you know, I'm hearing you loud and clear, Chief, that pay is important, and that's one of the struggles in recruiting. And I'm hearing it from young officers as well that leave, and they're like, I'm going to Fort Worth, or I'm going to Arlington, or I'm going somewhere else because I'm making more money and I've got to feed my family. And it's how do you combat that and say, you can't, because we're not paying them. So I think we could really do something by starting, you know, increasing that starting pay with the budget. I think that might be a good place to try to get that a little higher if we can. The next thing is the integrated health clinic. I'm trying to wrap my head around it. If maybe one of y'all can brief me later. I don't want to go all into it. I'm just, you know, worried that this could be getting us into a slippery slope of doing health and human services. That's the county's job. So I just brief me later, because I don't want to do it right now, if you don't mind, because I like the idea. It's just I want to make sure it's what we should be doing as a city and not get into the slippery slope of we're doing health and human services, which is the county's responsibility. The next thing is on the census. We definitely need to fund the census, do everything we can in our power to count every single person. Every committee meeting that We've talked about it. I've been loud and clear about it. Maybe certain folks have missed my comments about the census, and I'll be loud and clear about it one more time for the record. We've got to fund the census. We've got to count everybody. This is a lot of federal money that we missed last year, and you know, and we need to make sure that we don't miss it coming up, especially in our school district. You know, when every child we miss that's a newborn up to 5 years old, 10 years later, they're in middle school. They're in elementary and middle school, so we've got to make sure they get counted as well, because those are things that we're also then having to deal with as a city. We end up paying more for that, so if we can make sure we do that. Other than that, great budget, TC, and look forward to seeing everybody's amendments. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Medrano.
Thank you, Mayor. Again, I guess like everyone else, you know, I'm going to support the police and fire 5% increase, of course. I don't know where that's going to come from, but we're all going to work on that. And page 24, the first briefing, mine's going to be really quick. And I think Mr. Kingston mentioned it, but the animal cruelty unit, actually I've been working with John for probably the last 2 months. I didn't want to wait for this process and hope that we were able to get a unit or something dedicated to animal cruelty. So do you want to talk about
Yes, I'd be happy to. We have been working, as you said, for several months to evaluate our animal cruelty investigation process. And many of you are probably aware that we have a contract or an MOU, if you will, with the SPCA for those services. And so we've been carefully looking at that. And we believe that the partnership with SPCA has a lot of advantages to the city. But there's more that we can do. And so I've worked with the chief and her staff, and we will be assigning two detectives within the police department for animal cruelty investigations. And these detectives will be housed and located in the substations where we're seeing the highest incidences of animal cruelty. But more than that, we've also addressed how animal cruelty cases are reported, and often they go through 311 and or 911, and we're trying to provide some better integration, or I guess upfront interaction with citizens when they call us to make sure those cases get directed to the appropriate location. And then finally, we're currently working with SPCA. We plan to go back and take a look and see how we can continue to better refine and define the services and the cooperation between the city and SPCA. And so all of those things are in process, and we hope to implement that by October 1. Been working also with Ed Jameson and the Animal Services Department. There's a lot of details here that I'm not giving you just because there's a lot of operational changes that we'll be making. But suffice it to say, I think we are moving in a very positive direction. These do not require any budgetary changes because we'll be using existing resources to be able to do this. There may be some impact on some training. We'll probably want to make sure these new detectives receive the proper training and maybe a proper exposure to these type of crimes that they will be investigating. But outside of that, we do not anticipate needing any additional dollars.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you. I just wanted to put that out there. And this is very important, of course. I know that there was just a group, Just Save the Dog, that's advocating for this. I went out there to Dowdy Ferry, opened my eyes to what's going on. But I know that there's a way we can stop these dogfighting rings and illegal rodeos and all these other types of things. And I know that if they're doing those type of criminal activities, there's a lot more that's there that we're going to uncover. So thank you.
Thank you. Let me jump in since we got – well, no, go ahead. Let's we'll do second round. Ms. Gates. Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mayor. I know we're going to dive a little bit more until tomorrow, but some things that I would like to have looked at, and I kind of looked at it through the department. There's some new internal control services, which is like $774,000.
It is new to the city controller's office. It has been in existence. It was part of the Center for Performance Excellence. These are staff I guess she wants her clock
My
stopped.
My clock.
These are staff that have been working to do what I call audit liaison activities, so working with the city auditor's office and ensuring that management implements the audit recommendations when we say we're going to implement them. So that will now be in the city controller's office, and I'll be overseeing and coordinating citywide our responses to audits from the management side.
Okay. Then to be quick, I won't have you answer all these questions, but so the city manager budget, your office is going up by about $500,000. Is that, could I get an explanation of that?
We eliminated some reimbursements. It's not an increase in the expense side. It's a really an accounting
okay.
thing.
Great. City Marshal, $5.4 million increase. So where are those resources?
Mostly school crossing guards.
That's all. Okay. And then, so are we spending, is it right, like $17 million to manage the bond program? That's a new item, or is that coming out of
It is not new staff necessarily. It is that we have pulled them together from various places into the bond program management office. So it is a new way of managing things so that we have more transparency and visibility into the administrative costs of implementing the bond program.
Is it reimbursed, though, by the bonds themselves
yes.
or not? Okay, so it's not just a general fund. It's
correct.
Reimbursed. Okay. And then there was another area that there's non-departmental, and most of that I know is the TIF. But then there's about a $2 million that just says non-departmental. Is that?
I'm going to let Jack address
non-departmental.
That.
So included in non-departmental would be citywide contracts, our contract with the appraisal district, workers' comps, and different things that show up in that line item.
Okay. And then last in departmental, the internal service, it's like a $22 million increase. What is that? It just says internal service / other total.
Where are you looking?
At the very last, well, it's in the budget book on page 353. So,
Ms. Gates, let me get with you and find the information for you.
Okay, thanks. Because last year it was 158, now 181, $181 million. And then thank you, that update on the animal cruelty. I know, John, I've talked to you about it, and Mr. Jameson, I've talked about it. I knew we had that the SBCA MOU, but now this extension, I know several of us have been asking about it. Can you maybe... I know it's not all finalized, but I know we're getting a lot of questions about it. But what you said today, maybe like in a memo form that
yeah,
we can...
Absolutely. And I would just
that
like
we
to...
we can share.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that.
Okay. Thanks for that update. I think that's all. Oh, Mr. Kleiman asked the same question I had back on the rollback. Is that... On that page 12, how it says that the rollback is the effective general rate plus 8%. I'd like to know what our plus is, and I think that's exactly the question you were asking, right? Just so we know. Oh, you do? Okay.
Yes, we have an answer. That the total revenue growth due to property tax is a 7.78% growth, but when we have to back out the new construction to get the comparison to the 8% that you're looking for, that growth rate was 6.92%.
6.9%. Okay, because that's the rate that I think we've heard from Austin. They're talking about rolling back to 6 or to 4.
Right.
So we would be above 6, but less than
2 and a half.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 2.5. Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So, TC, Mr. Medrano asked you to reevaluate animal cruelty investigations, and you just decided to do it?
Yes.
So that's refreshing as hell. That never used to happen around here. Mr. Fortune, I will say that's a... It is great to hear the DPD is going to put some resources toward this. It's going to have to be more than just a title, you know, sergeant, detective, gang unit, beat cop, and alternating Fridays animal cruelty investigations. We've got to actually make that effective, but I'm very pleased to hear that responsiveness to Mr. Medrano's concern. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Kleiman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a question regarding FMPC number 24, the effective tax rate scenario. So we're obviously very deep into the budget here. What happened to that FMPC?
It is presented with the budget. So in your budget book, there is an effective tax rate scenario presented at the same time as the city manager's budget. Yes. So it is there.
So are we not going to just – thank you, Ricky. I got a copy of it. So are we not going to have any discussion about it? It's not scheduled for discussion?
Well, so we did discuss it in the tax rate or the tax presentation to say that we would need to cut – roughly $33 million in expenses in order to comply with the effective tax rate. So we did address it in that way, that the city manager was proposing the higher rate of 76.50, but of course a tax rate cut from this year. So we discussed all of that, but in terms of the specifics of the cuts that we have put together, we certainly can address any questions that you have on that, but they're provided in the materials.
Okay, so there's not going to be like a council discussion of actually complying with the effective tax rate. It is just assumed by the city manager's office that we will be imposing a tax increase on our citizens. That's the assumption.
We'll entertain amendments.
I'm asking staff. I'm asking the city manager. You're just assuming a tax rate increase, correct? Kind of yes or no.
Well, I mean, I don't know if the question is phrased the way I would probably phrase it. The issue is, we
does your budget assume a tax rate increase?
No, it is a tax rate decrease of 1.54 cents.
You're right. I'm sorry. Does your budget assume a tax increase?
When compared to the effective tax rate, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
The first page of your budget says we are doing a tax increase on the cover page, correct?
Yes. It does not state that.
Really?
Yes.
It says this budget
required
will raise
by state law. The requirement
this
is
budget
there.
Will raise property taxes than last year's budget by $71 million or 7.78%. Is that not a confession that you're proposing a tax increase?
That is a confessional without a confession without the confessional. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. It's just very frustrating that really, staff has just dismissed this FNPC, saying, oh, in the back as a memo, there's FNPC. But the nice part is I've got my budget amendments all lined up because I'll just go right down that list. Thank you very much. I also want to address this question of public safety increase that I've heard a lot of my colleagues advocate for. So there's no increase in the current budget, and we're going to add one?
The increase, are you talking about the meet and confer? Is that what
well, sure. I don't know.
So for public safety pay?
People are calling for adding more money to the budget for public safety.
So, Councilman, what is in the budget, I think, as Elizabeth as well as I covered, are the city meeting its obligations for meet and confer mm-hmm. at $25.7 million in pay increases this year, in addition, obviously, to the impacted pension costs, and then a $15 million addition to annualize that number in the following fiscal year.
So the current budget does have a pay increase.
It has approximately the 2 years have about $47 million plus or minus, not counting the amounts that would go up the following year associated with pension.
And not to use too many inside baseball terms, this increase actually is a double step.
It is.
It's a double increase.
For those who have steps, yes, or a 2%.
What percentage is a double step?
10%.
So there's a 10% increase in the budget. So everybody's just saying, yes, we like that, or are they asking for more than that?
My understanding is folks are talking about more than that.
Okay, and I know you guys know how to count. You better revise the budget, because from what I've heard around this support sheet, sounds like we're going to dip into the taxpayers' pockets even further to go beyond a contractual amount. And that's another thing that kind of baffles my mind. Is meet and confer – What is that? Is that a contract between us and the unions, or what does that mean?
It is an agreement.
Okay. So
and
we have an agreement.
And it is approved by council.
And that agreement covers this budget?
It's a three-year agreement. Right. The term was 3 years. And so
we're going to break that agreement? That's what the unions are asking us to do, is just contracts don't mean anything? Obligations, commitments don't mean anything?
I think it would require revision to the agreement.
It would actually require. So to do that, we'd have to revise the agreement in time for the budget to be approved by the end of September.
I believe. believe that would be accurate, yes.
Okay. Wow. So we're negotiating meeting deferral actually a year earlier than was agreed to in the past.
We're scheduled to start discussions on the next meet and confer agreement starting in September.
Right, but to accomplish what I hear the tax increase, an additional tax increase that I hear my colleagues calling for, to pay for that in the budget that's proposed, we'd have to rework meet and confer the existing agreement, like renege that agreement.
We would probably address on a limited basis the language necessary to implement the council's direction.
Okay, so contracts don't really mean anything in the city of Dallas.
Councilman, is that rhetorical?
No, I guess I could ask the city attorney's opinion. Do contracts mean anything in the city of Dallas?
The budget reflects our contractual obligations. What council has expressed a desire to do would be outside of the contract. Hence, and therefore, is why it's not recommended in my proposed budget.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'll close with just a couple of comments. Because of Mr. Atkins' concern about voting on this item today, I'm going to hold this till next Wednesday. I wish we had posted this at the end of the day tomorrow because, you know, we've got, I think it's fair to kind of go through this whole discussion and then post it. But I'm being told by the city attorney's office we can't vote on this tomorrow, right? I just want to confirm that.
Correct.
Okay, so we can't vote on it tomorrow. Mr. Atkins would like to see the whole budget laid out, okay? So I will post this for Wednesday, and we will do it on Wednesday, okay? Now, let me be clear about where I stand. Bulla Bulla, TC, all that stuff I said, everybody said, and I've said it earlier, okay? I will not be supporting an increase in the tax rate that you have recommended, okay? I will not probably be going deeper, okay, like Mr. Kleinman is suggesting, but this is an important step in our fiscal responsibility to the taxpayers, and the taxpayers have given and given, and if I understand right, the taxpayers are going to be paying more than they paid last year, right? $150 more on average?
Because okay. Values have gone up.
Because the values have gone up, mm-hmm. And we got that. And okay. All right. Well, I got it. So we're doing that. I'm not going to support, and I don't think we as a council should be just trying to take and take and take and take and take from our property owners, okay, with these taxes. Just because it's there, you know, it's like we think we can take it. And this is what gets us in real issues, and we're gonna see a big battle at the legislature this year. Okay, I just want everybody to understand that. And as we go through it, now how we spend that money, okay? I've got my opinions, but I think anything's on the table, and we should talk about it. Obviously, I'm gonna just forewarn you now because as we get in tomorrow. I'm gonna ask the chief a question because we don't have a council person here for District 4. We do not have economic dollars and housing dollars planned in the MVA in our housing strategy, okay, for District 4. We've all agreed that we're going to do fundamental, foundational stuff. So I expect that we're spending more money in District 4 on public safety issues, okay, to make sure that crime goes down. Is there any strategy there, Chief, that you'd like to talk about?
The strategies that we're using in District 4?
Yeah, I would like some special things in District 4 because they're not getting economic development dollars because we've got a housing strategy and
seven is nine.
Okay, well, excuse me, I'm speaking on behalf of the citizens of District 4 right now. Okay, we'll talk. You're going to talk good about
District 7?
We have two enforcement actions in District 4, 3550 Overton, as well as Ledbetter and Bonneview. And we have addressed those issues repeatedly. What we have is a very robust plan with code enforcement as well as with community prosecutors.
We'll talk about that tomorrow. But there is more money in District 4, I mean, in this budget for District 4 than other places because of this strategy.
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right, because we want to do it. Now, let's talk about public safety in general. First of all, congratulations to our police department. You know, over the last 7 or 8, 9, 10 years, our crime rate has come down, and citizens are safer today in the city of Dallas than they've ever been before, given the numbers that that you report continually. We've got, I think, the best police department in the nation.
I agree.
And I appreciate the professional and hard work. There's no question we've got an issue with response times, okay, especially with twos and threes. And I think everybody is aligned around that. And the issue is one of not having enough officers, which we've kind of all talked about today. So to me, the question is, how do we go about compensation to try to facilitate that? Now, there are pension issues, okay, the changes were made, were a major issue in changing that. I do believe that us spending $47 million more dollars, okay, this year, $47 million more dollars on a run rate this budget is a huge, huge step in the right direction, all right? And so no one say we're not paying our police officers more this year. We're paying them a lot more, and they deserve it, okay? The question is this, okay? As we look at the attrition and we look at hiring, what's the answer? And I think you said salary is a part of the answer, right? Before I go there, you and I spoke, Chief, and you said there are other hurdles of why we're not being able to recruit these days, okay? And to me, this is a very, very serious issue, and we've got to look at everything, all right? And I did not know that if you had smoked marijuana in the past, okay, you know, sometime in your life, you couldn't be a police officer. And I know a lot of good people probably sitting around this horseshoe, okay, that have probably done that, okay? I don't know if that's true or not, okay? All right? Maybe it is true. No, there's no one around the horseshoe?
Start with yourself.
I think there's probably some people around this horseshoe. I'm not saying everybody, okay? And just issues like that that we've got to kind of think about and break down the barriers for those things. Because you said you want to do any and all things possible.
Yes, sir.
And so I think we need to do that. And by the way, I agree with Mr. McGee, okay? $250,000 is not enough money, okay? I've been in the advertising business my whole life, okay? And the $200,000 we got on the homeless thing, I think it's really a good little campaign, but it's not. You've got to be above the breakthrough area. We should be spending $1 million, maybe $2 million in recruiting and to get the word out in a way. So that's my, I'm in the weeds there, but that's my point of view. The bigger issue is how do we deal with the salary issue, okay? And to me, doing a across-the-board pay raise is like taking a chainsaw to heart surgery, okay? You just can't just throw money up against the issue. You've got to understand where the issues are. And issue one is the recruiting levels, okay? Some folks over talked about that we're not at that level. And if somebody came back to me and said, hey, we could spend, you know, more, you know, $5 million more dollars and be able to get our lower level salaries up higher this year, I'd do it. I mean, you know, I'm just using that as an example. So we need to think about this as we're kind of thinking about how do we spend the money. And then I also believe our system is broken. Our step system, the whole thing is just kind of off kilter compared to other cities around. And that's why we have the meet and confer process. And the meet and confer process is an important process that we're going to sit down, strategize with our partners, and do what's best for them and do what's best for us at the same time. But just on taking $20 million more dollars and just throwing it against on top of a $47 million more dollar thing, I don't think that's doing our citizens the service they need as we think about the issues they've got. And they want to make sure that our police officers are taken care of right, but we need to spend it correctly. So I just wanted to be clear on that. Last point I wanted to make is I'm excited about the integrated health care, the health clinic. Mr. Narvaez, just to answer your question, right now it's just land, so I wouldn't be for us, you know, getting into that business. But Christy's done a great job. It was part of the Neighbor Up thing that came out of it. And thank you, Mr. McGew, for bringing it to public safety. That's the sort of thing we got to think about all over our city to kind of deal with the poverty issues that we have. And last but not least, I'd love to put some more money in ethics. And every time we bring up ethics, to me, I vote yes to them. So it's odd that we have debate every time we bring up ethics. So with that, I'm gonna close the meeting now, and we'll pick it up in the morning. Meeting's adjourned.